Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio.
Oh boy.
Here we go. I think Action Radio is about to take a quantum leap in the national debate, in force, in activism, in all the things that we do here that we've wanted to do, certainly I've wanted to do, to get out in the public in a way that allows us to really have an impact on the national debate. So when we write a bill on, say, for example, a 30-day comment period, required of all expenditures above $100 million coming out of Congress. Now, I just kind of picked that figure. I don't know if that's realistic or not, but it sounds good. It sounds good to me. It sounds high enough that the trivial stuff can pass, and it sounds low enough that nothing really serious will get through. You know, $100 million, it's not a lot of money for Congress, considering the $40 billion that they want to take to Ukraine. And I've heard that our whole defense budget is like $760 billion. All right. I think that $40 billion is almost equivalent to Russia's entire defense budget. So it's really kind of interesting. So the permanent war class is hard at work at Ukraine, keeping this war going as long as possible. I had kind of a weird thought last night that if Trump wants to do something interesting, he should get Luchinsky. Is it Luchinsky? I'm probably pronouncing it wrong. The president of Ukraine and Putin together and meet at Mar-a-Lago. just to show the administration, or meet at Iceland, do another Reykjavik concert conference, go someplace. Reagan was there and met Gorbachev, where he said, "Nyet, I'm not going to do that," you know, to Gorbachev, which is pretty funny actually. But it wouldn't be interesting if, I mean, Trump, I mean, I there's a lot of things I wanted for Trump. I wish Trump had gone, if not to Hong Kong, spoken about Hong Kong, you know, telling Xi of China, you know, Chairman Xi, you know, let Hong Kong be Hong Kong. It would have been one of those moments like the Berlin Wall when Reagan said, "Mr. Gorbachev, you know, open this gate," referring to the Brandenburg Gate. "Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall." And of course, that still echoes through history, and all the minions that Reagan had said, "Don't do it." If my voice sounds a little scratchy, I have one day a week that I do my day job, and unfortunately, it's outside. Most of the time, it's great because I'm in Florida; it's not really a problem. Yesterday, I had to walk through a hailstorm. It was part of my job, and I got really wet. I mean, really soaking wet, and it was cold. And so if I come down with a massive cold, well, let me put it this way: come hell or high water, I'm gonna talk through today's show. I don't care how scratchy my voice gets, because we have a really special guest who I hope will become a regular part of the program. Anyway, so I hear about this ridiculous hailstorm. I say it was freezing. You know, cars were going about, you know, 10 miles an hour in a 45 zone. It was pretty amazing. Anyway. Point of all this being that there's a lot. Oh, someone's texting me already. Guys, don't text me in the middle of the show. Okay, hang on. I think that's my guess. Let me see if I can do something at the same time here. My guest in the second hour. In fact, and Dr. Pry can't make it today, Dr. Peter Pry. So we're probably going to take the whole 2 hours. There's somebody that I met about, this is 2018. So what's that? Almost 4 years ago now. Her name is Mama B. Her actual name is B. Thomas, but no, she's known as Mama B. She knows everybody. She's one of the high-up folks in the Republican Party in Florida, possibly nationally, too. I mean, I don't know all the details, so I'm going to have to do it as I'm talking. I'm texting Mama B as I'm talking to you right now. So I'm she just needs the phone number, 215. There you go, 383-883, so I can give it to you folks at the same time. 3, 2. Oop, hang on. I made it. There we go. 215-383-3832. There we go. I'm going to put a little note on the air now. See, this is what happened. I need a producer, by the way. So on the air now. And then talk to you. I shouldn't do this while I'm on the air, but it's funny. Do, 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 do. Oh. Here we go. All right. Hope that works. this is live radio. This is what happens when I push all the buttons. I do all the crazy. I could have played something, but I think it was so funny. Anyway, so Mama B. So here's what happened. there was a time back when I was working with Donnie West, who is a Democrat, quite liberal, and we got along. We were friends. I haven't heard much from him lately, but we did a series of videos, Action Radio video channel, and it was sort of like a Hannity and Combs kind of thing. I'd play conservative, he'd play liberal, and we talk about things. I mean, we're very civil. We had some really great adventures. We went to like we did a food truck thing with some new folks from, I think, New Jersey who were here in town. We did a mead tasting, you know, from like the whiskey place on Palafox Street in Pensacola. We walked all around Milton and did a bunch of shows in Milton. One of the things we did was we were at a rally, and the rally was for Ron DeSantis, Matt Gaetz. This is back when Ron DeSantis was congressman, not governor yet. So now Governor DeSantis, Congressman Matt Gaetz, Congressman Jim Jordan, and talk show news guy Sean Hannity. And they're all there at this place called the Fish House. And it was pouring rain. So Donnie and I, we planned to do some videos. So we set up outside. They had these tables out back, and they had these nice big umbrellas. And so we went back there, and we got up before the rain. So we set up our little video cam and our umbrella, and we're just talking. And if you didn't see the video cam, and apparently people didn't, because they just came up and talked to us. I said, guys, you're on live video. I'm like, oh, that's cool. Anyway, so there's a woman looking at us, and she's talking. And she's got this big booming voice. And I'm looking at her, she's looking back, and we're sort of like, I looked at her. I said, do you want to come on? Do you want to make a video? She's like, okay, sure. So she sits between Donnie and me, and Mama B's about, I don't know, 5'1". You know, Donnie and I are both 6 foot, right? And so she's in the middle of us. But, of course, when you're sitting on these barstool things, this picnic table, it doesn't matter. Anyway, so there we are talking away. And we did about a 15-16 minute video, and I think it cut out of the rain. The show start. So we had to go to the rally. Otherwise, we would have kept talking to her. And so it was fabulous. And then, you know, people came up to me later, said, you were talking to Mama B. Who's Mama B? That woman that was in the video. That's Mama B. Oh, really? Who's Mama B? I mean, I didn't know, right? So anyway, so as the story continues, I found out like in the weeks that followed, wow, gee, that was, and I tried to get in touch or something happened, whatever it was, we both got busy. And here it is 4 years later, right? So now our paths cross again. And I've forgotten exactly I know how they crossed, because she's involved with a presentation tonight. So there's a presentation tonight at Blue Wahoo Stadium. And I know this show goes out internationally, but, you know, local stuff is fun. So get involved in your local community. You can have as much fun as we do here. So there's a presentation going around the country called The Awakening. And it's by filmmaker Frank X. Panico, P-A-N-I-C-O, author Dr. Lisa Babbage, B-A-B-B-A-G-E. And we've got cast members, including Pensacola's own Mama B. Thomas. And I looked at that. I thought, I know who she is. Okay. So I got to contact her. So this is over like the last, you know, 3 or 4 days. So I'm trying to get a hold of her. And eventually we connected. And she's like, who are you? Well, you may not remember, but we met in a video at the Fish House 4 years ago. She's like, I know you. And of course, this went back and forth, right? It was kind of crazy. So Mama B is going to be on. Now, the presentation is tonight. So today, Monday, May 16th, at 7 p.m. at Blue Wahoo Stadium. Wahoo is a fish, for those that don't know. So the Blue Wahoo is a famous fish around here. And I keep getting confused whether it's Wahoo or Wahoo. Someone's going to have to correct me on that. I'm still, you know, I've only been here about 5 years, so I should know these things. Anyway, so the doors open at 6:30, and the Blue Wahoo Stadium is a really fabulous place because it's, I think it's AAA baseball. It's small enough. You can see the players. You're up close. I've spoken there twice now for medical freedom rallies. I'll be there again Friday. So anyway, we're going to talk to Mama B about the awakening. And I said, well, why are you here? Well, let's talk about everything else. So we had a long chat on the phone Friday, and we were just having so much fun. I said, you got to come on the show. And I'm hoping she'll be a regular, because she has so much to talk about. And so a lot of today is very unstructured. I mean, I've got tons of information. I've got articles. I got enough material for about, you know, 5 shows for the whole week. I could just sit here and do monologue, but that's boring. So I want to invite anybody to call in. I checked the Skype line. No one's checked on Skype lately. Let's do the live chat. Live chat's at the bottom of your broadcast page. So you want to just text in a comment from anywhere in the world. I mean, feel free. Live chat might be big when Mama B gets here, because a lot of people know who she is. So here's what I'm thinking. I'm just kind of speculating here. Okay, no one's on live chat yet. What I think is going to happen, and this is my hope, is that we're going to work together, Mama B and I, and we're going to work on legislation at the national, at the state, and at the local level. And so we can combine, you know, her strengths and my strengths and Action Radio strengths and her organization and the Republican Party, if we can actually get them to be the Republican Party and not be a bunch of, gelding old party, you know, and various rhinos who I now call transgender Democrats, then we can really accomplish something here. And so that's what I'm hoping. So we'll see. let's hope for the best, try for the best, and expect the best. And then sometimes the best actually happens. So I got to play you something real quickly here because I want to make sure some of you can contact us in the next hour. And then I'll get into some news stories because there's a bunch of stuff going on. And of course, anybody's welcome to call. You know, feel free, 215-383-3832. And we'll be back in a bit. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try. Even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Penglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com. This is Greg Penglis for Strikeforce, your source for pure energy. Strikeforce is a concentrated energy drink that turns a half liter of your favorite beverage into an energy drink. It contains caffeine, taurine, B vitamins, and potassium. You make your energy drink yourself. Here's how. Add one pack to a standard half liter water bottle or 16 ounce glass to create a full power energy drink. No sugar, no calories, no stirring, no shaking. Strikeforce energy drinks come in original, grape, lemon, and orange. Each flavor pack is a liquid that adds an explosion of flavor to any beverage. Here's the best part. Action Radio is an affiliate of Strikeforce, so our listeners get a 20% discount. All you do is add our code, WYL, to the discount code window at checkout. That's WYL. WYL comes from our website, Right Your Laws. So, you can get your energy drink, get a 20% discount, and help Action Radio change the relationship of we the people to our government. Not bad. Strikeforce is at StrikeforceEnergy.com. That's StrikeforceEnergy.com. Start your engines. Okay, I just got one more thing to play real quick. I actually have one more text to do, and then I'll be able to get back to the show. It's a little crazy this morning. It'll all make sense to you when Mama B comes on. But anyway, so let me just play one more thing for you here. It's just once you get the hang of it, I mean, people don't realize that we don't have a broadcast station. And that's something that confuses a lot of people. And because it's all online, everything's a little bit different. But the show's growing. I mean, Canadian audience is growing very quickly, and the Australian audience is growing too. I think primarily because of our Australian Bill of Individual Rights. Canada, just because they're listening more to Freedom, because they're not getting it from Canadian media, that's for sure. So we are, I think, the ultimate free speech zone in the United States. I don't think anybody talks about the things that we talk about, which makes this such a crazy place. So I got one more quick text. And by the way, Strikeforce is people starting to take advantage of our special deal on Strikeforce. And, of course, that helps Action Radio, too. So anytime you use the discount code WYL, you know, that stands for Right Your Laws, at Strikeforce, get yourself an energy drink. That helps us. So you're helping. So you get your energy and you get your freedom at the same time. That's because everything goes, you know, back into the show. Be back in 43 seconds.
Joe Biden's dark winter. No freedom. No liberty, no guns, no representation, no oil, no coal, no nuclear power, no space force, no constitution, no family gatherings, no vacations, just taxes, work, misery, masks, lockdowns, and ever more government. This is what will happen if you let Marxists steal the election. This has been a public service announcement of Action Radio, reminding you it's time to get off your butt and save your country.
That's what we try to do, you know, and not just not we by ourselves, but with you, you, the citizen. I mean, that's really what it's all about. Okay, I think we're all squared away. So let's get back to what's going on. There's another assassin who's been arrested. There's another mass murderer. Of course, we know I'm talking about Buffalo, but he's not the only one. It's kind of interesting that another mass murderer, I think, killed the same amount of people, 10 people. It's kind of interesting, interesting coincidence, is the New York subway shooter, one black, one white. We have very different coverage on the news, but we knew there'd be very different coverage on the news. One has been called a white supremacist everywhere. The other was called a black supremacist and a black nationalist only in a few places. The New York shooter, subway shooter, has been pretty much taken off the news. The white shooter up in Buffalo is going to be talked about forever. And so it leads to a theory that I've been forming, and I found an article by Axios. Maybe I should take this one up right away. Axios had an interesting article. And let's see if I get my many sources here. I got too many sources. I got Bill sources. I got enough stuff, like I say, for, because I don't know exactly where my conversation with Mama B is going to go. It's going to go a lot of different places. But I found something really interesting. Well, let me get my well, that's not the one I want here. So I'm juggling again. So what happens? You get one hand on the mouse, one hand on the microphone, you know, and we're kind of all over the place here. Let's bring this up. There it is. Okay. And so this article on Axios talked about live streaming motivated the Buffalo shooter. So let me cover what they said, then I'll say what I think, because I absolutely agree. I think this is about fame. I think the assassin, I don't like calling him the shooter, you know, the because that's like an anti-gun term. The assassin, the murderer, let's talk about what he is, and then we can find out what he isn't. What he is a murderer and an assassin, okay? What he is a seeker of fame. I think that's I think the head cam proves that. And my theory is that this person, they keep calling him racist white supremacist. I think he's using race to gain fame. I think that's the problem. We've created a situation here where anybody who, you know, if a white man shoots, you know, black American citizens, then that's news. That's instant news, especially if a white police officer shoots black citizens. That's news. Doesn't always work the other way, but that's not the point. The point is that if you're you know, a young white guy, 18 years old, you want to get the most amount of fame by doing the worst possible thing you can do and get the most coverage for it, you go to a neighborhood and kill people of a different race, particularly white on black crime, as this is. The other thing you do is you go to a place where the least amount of citizens are armed, New York. Okay, and he'll figure this in. This is very well planned out. This is very methodical. There's a lot of thought that goes into this. So let me just tell you, get through the article real quickly, and then I'll tell you what I think the cure, not the cure, but at least a treatment for the problem would be. But I think we have to first identify the right problem. You know, does this person, I mean, they've got a huge manifesto. Are they advocating, you know, as a white supremacist would advocate, you know, the annihilation, as in a Holocaust of minority folks? I don't know. I mean, that's what Germany did. Nazi Germany, the Aryan race. The whole point of Nazi Germany was to eliminate not only Jews, but anybody they found undesirable. So the master race would survive. That is a totalitarian Holocaust brought about by a totalitarian government. So if you're a white supremacist, you have to believe in a totalitarian government. Well, that's leftists. So by definition, white supremacists are leftists because they want to invoke a totalitarian government to carry out their Holocaust. Okay, that's how it works. That's just a simple political analysis. There's nothing overly complicated about that. You're not going to find right-wing white supremacists because they don't have the government power behind them to do what they want to do. Yeah, I can be racist. You get a ton of white racists on the right as you do on the left and everywhere else. Yeah, but to be a supremacist, to be an actual person that believes in either the mass deportation or the mass elimination of people that you don't like, of a race that's different from you, you know, you have to be a leftist because by definition, it's going to take a totalitarian government to carry out what you want, whether Holocaust, mass deportation, assassination, starvation, any of the things that have happened around the world by leftist dictators, Stalin, Mao, Hitler, Pol Pot, you know, the list, you know, Castro, Chavez, you know, the list is pretty extensive and goes back, you know, through antiquity, you know, back to Genghis Khan and earlier. Okay. And that's what dictators, that's what, you know, one person leaders do. Anyway, so I think our problem is that we've created a situation where fame, where notoriety, where if you want your name to live forever, the surest way to do it for a young white guy is to kill black Americans. And that's a very sad situation because it almost makes a target, you know, for fame. Okay, now why should anybody have the burden of being a target for fame? Okay, especially in a place where they're disarmed. Okay. So this is there's a lot going on here. Now, what's my cure? Well, my cure is very simple. Solitary confinement for life. Incommunicado. No media. No contact. With this case, we know who the person is. So I don't think we have to worry about, reasonable doubt. I don't think there's any doubt. But we still have to go through a trial. We still have to go through due process because that protects the innocent people that are brought up, and that people would say, we know who did it, but you really don't. Okay. This case, we really do, but you can't use that to deny due process to other people. But upon conviction, if I were the judge in this case, I would impose a sentence of because I don't think New York had death penalty. But I think the death penalty would bring more attention. First of all, you linger around for 20, 25 years during your appeals. I think life in prison, incommunicado, which means no communication of any kind, no media, no press, no interviews, no news, no media, no internet, nothing. Incommunicado. You cannot communicate with anybody. In fact, it'd be nice if the guards, treated them silently. And mandatory solitary. Solitary for life, incommunicado. Okay, so you would never know if you were famous or not. You would never know if anybody's talking about you, and chances are they wouldn't because you'd be forgotten, right? If you're incommunicado in prison and nobody can talk to you and you get no input from what's going on in the outside world, the only world you know is your cell and an exercise yard and solitary meals and that's it and nobody talks to you, it's probably a form of insanity. I think most people would go insane under those conditions, but if that's what people are facing, what's the next person going to do? What's the next would-be assassin who wants fame, who wants to kill people of a different race because that's the surest way to get yourself on the news? They got to think twice about it, because if the punishment is a lifetime incommunicado and you're erased, where nobody sees your picture, nobody hears your name, your trials are completely sequestered, they're silent, not even a sketch artist can get in. Okay. They can report on it, but you never hear it because, maybe you hear the trial, but if upon conviction, that's it, you disappear. I think that would change a lot. That would dissuade those that are doing this for fame. There's still crazy people out there that do crazy things. People are run over in Waukesha, for example, by an SUV. We have people that are killing people. There was a church that was a victim of a shooting yesterday too. Now, what we're not talking about is how many of these folks are illegal aliens. We don't know yet. That's very interesting to find out. I'd be curious. Anyway, so Axios wrote this quick article here. It was done Sarah Fisher, F-I-C-H-E-R, and Ina Fried, F-R-I-E-D. And this was an Axios. Let me see if I can get your date here. 46 minutes ago. Okay, so this one just came. No, I think it was actually yesterday. But I haven't updated it for a while. Twitch. Here's the article. Twitch says it managed to take down the live stream of the weekend mass shooting in Buffalo within 2 minutes after it started. That's the live stream of the killings, of what this assassin was doing, right? However, videos of the shooting have been viewed millions of times. Okay, why does this matter? It says, live streaming mass shooting events can give assailants, I call them assassins, well, once they're convicted, assurance that their crimes will live online for many years. Okay, this is why I think the fame. I think we've got the fame thing, but I think the race component, using race to get fame, I don't think that's being talked about. But the fame is absolutely being talked about, and I agree with Axios on this, or they agree with me. We talked about this yesterday. It says, indeed, the man arrested in conjunction with the shooting said knowing he could broadcast his attack was part of his impetus. There you go. Live streaming this attack gives me some motivation in a way that I know that some people will be cheering for me. And that's from the assassin himself, right? And this is the quote is the shooter said during his racist video rant during the attack. So isn't it for the fame? Killing people for what kind of society have we come to where people are killing other people for fame? That's scary. Cut out the fame and you may save some lives. I think you will save lives. And this is catch up quick. Authorities are investigating the mass shooting by an 18-year-old white man as a hate crime and a case of racially motivated violent extremism. I think the extremism is the extreme desire for fame. I think that's what needs to be looked into. You want to do a psychological profile? Find out why this guy is willing to kill other people for fame. Why he's so specific that he targeted black people as a white guy, knowing that that's going to get you the greatest amount of fame, the fastest, and the most news coverage for the longest period of time. So that's what really motivated this, I think. Anyway, correct me if you think I'm wrong. Feel free. And I think I've got. I think we're okay as far as text goes. I think we're getting organized here. Okay, so I have to do that. All right. So let me get you another story. We ain't done. There's a lot going on. Let's talk about our favorite person, Dr. Fascist. Dr. Fascist is the genocidal, psychopathic, narcissistic, avaricious, compulsively lying vaccine drug pusher. In fact, I think I may have left out a couple of adjectives, but that's who he is. Okay. And what's he doing? He's making money. See, we always thought this is about money. The whole COVID thing was about money. You know, when Moderna was created in 2010 to create messenger RNA snake oil gene shots, okay, and then 2015 when I think they started working on SARS-1, and then 2019 they got SARS-2, you know, and so all these things are manufactured. So the vaccine came out first, then they tailored the virus to the vaccine to create the maximum amount of terror and, in many cases, the least amount of death so that the hospitals could kill people by government policy. So of those million people that died, I'd say maybe only probably only 50,000 would have died without the government policy, maybe 100,000, but probably about 50,000 would have died without the government policy. And the other, 950,000 would have gotten early treatments and been just fine. Okay. So that's really what it was. This is a government pandemic. This is not a COVID. It's not a viral pandemic. It's a government pandemic because we knew the cures. But here's where it gets interesting. Open the books. Adam Andrzejewski. I hope I pronounced that right. A-N-D-R-Z-E. J-E-W-S-K-I. I wonder if he's Ukrainian. I don't know. I'm thinking, right? I wonder if it's kind of interesting. All right. So Fauci's royalties and the $350 million royalty paid payment stream hidden by the NIH. So you got to understand, the health Nazis are in it for the money. Okay? So they create death to make money. They work with Big Pharma to get good jobs to make more money. But the real money is in the royalties and in the license fees and in the patents. They patent medicine. Okay. Ever since that 76 law under Dole, somebody else, that said that government officials could profit off their inventions. Well, see, that's wrong. If you're working for the government, you know, you get a salary. That's it. Okay. What you invent, what you create, the work that you do is for the country because you're a public servant. So you're not supposed to make money off that separately. If you want to make money off it separately, leave government, start your own company, make all the money you want. I got no problem with that. That's what America is all about. However, you know, if you're taking your expertise paid for by government, you may owe the government, you may owe us, the taxpayers, a whole lot of money. You know, if you made money off government by using government stuff to make your own living, that's a whole different story. But anyway, the point being, if you're a government servant, if you're a public servant, you can't make extra money. I mean, that's just the way it goes. If you were, I'm sure this still applies. If you worked for Bell Labs, for example, you know, AT&T, Ma Bell, there were cases of people that wanted to take their new phone creations and sell them privately. Well, you can't do that. You're under contract for the company, okay? So the company pays you a salary, you know, whether you invent or not. I mean, assuming, hopefully you will, all right? And anything that you invent, the patents are all held by the company because you're working for the company. You're not working for yourself. So there are scientists out there working for companies. You think Apple people can suddenly leave Apple with some new invention that they created for Apple, the next iPhone? They can't do that. They're under contract. They'd have a lawsuit so big they'd never work again, and rightly so, because they're under contract from Apple. Apple gives them the company, the resources, the ability, the lab stuff, the technicians, the assistants, you know, all the folks that go into allowing these high-tech people to invent these things for Apple, you know, in exchange for Apple gets the patents. You know, you worked for Apple. That's how it works. Nothing wrong with that. That's the way it's supposed to work. Otherwise, people will be stealing from the company. They take all the company resources, start their own company based on what they learned from the previous company, make a fortune, and the previous company would go broke. Well, that's crazy. Anyway, so that's how companies protect their interests. Now, why shouldn't the government do the same thing? Well, government, because the government's different than you and me. So now we got a situation where Dr. Fascist and the other health Nazis are making a fortune. Well, Nazis made a fortune in World War II, by the way. Okay, you know, all the gold from thieves and all the other things that they stole and the artworks and the treasures. I mean, Goering had trainloads of artwork he stole. You know, I think they're still finding stuff that were stolen by Nazis in World War II. It's a fascinating period and disgusting all at the same time. So, article, May 9th, Adam Andrzejewski, hope I didn't butcher your name, says it's the first time since 2005 that the NIH royalty payments received oversight. See, the government's not watching. They're not watching the cookie jar, right? So guess who's got their hands in the cookie jar? Dr. Fascist and the other health Nazis. So it says right here, here's the article, says last year, the National Institutes of Health, Anthony Fauci's employer, as we know him as Dr. Fascist's employer, doled out $30 billion. That's with a B. That's bravo for you military folks and pilots and navigators and shit people. 30 bravo billion in government grants to roughly 56,000 recipients. Not bad work if you can get it. 30 billion by 56,000. Who can do the math? I don't think I have enough zeros in my calculator, and I don't have time. I'm on the air. Someone do the math. Call me up, 215-383-3832, or post it in our chat, our live chat. Oh, nobody's on live chat yet. Okay. bottom of your broadcast page. So I want to know how much money this is. 30 billion into 50,000 people. That's a lot of money. All right, let me get back to my article here. It says that's largesse. This is back to Adam Andrzejewski talking again. That largesse of taxpayer money buys a lot of favor and clout within the scientific research and healthcare industries. Shit. Buys a lot of clout in politics too, and the national debate and marketing for yourself, and you know, villas in the south of France, and you know, wherever else they're going to spend the money. Be interesting to know how many properties Dr. Fascist has around the world, and how much money is in those Cayman Island offshore accounts. Because who's the senator that the Kansas senator found he had $10 million that he didn't report to the government? Now we're going to find more. He's going to be one of the richest people ever to serve in government. You watch. This guy is so corrupt. He's been doing this for so long. That's why he's been alive so long. He's probably got the best medical treatment in the world. You know, I know he didn't take the jab. I can virtually guarantee it. Remember when we had Dr. Brian Artis on? He was on Wednesday. And I asked him, I said, do you think that the major people in government, you know, the health folks like Dr. Fascist, you know, and all the other people, you know, Brandon, all that, I said, do you think they're getting the jab? He said, no, I don't think so either. The doctor from Nigeria, I've forgotten her name. Stella Emanuel. Stella Emanuel says, look, give me a sample. Give me a urine sample. I'll tell you who's on what. I'll tell you who's taking hydroxychloroquine in the government and who isn't. She's great. Hopefully we've got her on the show, and we already had Dr. Artis. I'm going to be on Dr. Artis' show probably in a couple of weeks, so that's going to be fun too. We're going to talk legislation. All right, so back to this article. However, in our breaking investigation, this is Adam Andrzejewski. I just like saying that because it's fun. He said, we found hundreds of millions of dollars in payments that also flow the other way. There are royalty payments from third-party payers, think pharmaceutical companies. Yeah, this is what we call, you know, graft, corruption, bribery, right? Okay. Back to the NIH. Oh, what a surprise. An individual NIH scientist. Big pharma paying off the NIH. What a friggin' surprise that is. Okay. He says, we estimate that between fiscal years 2010 and 2020, when most of the damage, I think, was done, more than $350 million, that's with an M, that's Mike, $350 million in royalties were paid by third parties to the agency and the NIH scientists who are credited as co-inventors. Well, how many co-inventors? Co usually means two. Okay, maybe three. How many co-inventors are cashing in on this, on that 350 mil? Sweet work, huh? Not bad. So you get your government salary, plus you get perks. This is like a fringe benefit, you know, $10 million check, fringe benefit, right? Or however much they get. I don't know. He says, because those payments enrich the agency and its scientists, each and every royalty payment could be a potential conflict of interest and needs disclosure. No kidding. Recently, our organization at OpenTheBooks.com, there you go, OpenTheBooks.com. I've been trying to get them on the show, really. It's just, you know, minions. You know, when minions read my emails, Action Radio, Citizen Legislature, ha, 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 ha. Yeah, right. You'll talk to me. One, sooner or later, you're all going to talk to me. All right. Sorry, back to the article. Recently, our organization at OpenTheBooks.com forced NIH to disclose over 22,100 royalty payments, totaling nearly $134 million with an M, paid to the agency and nearly 1,700 NIH scientists. See, government science is good work, right? If you get paid, they're probably paid so much, they'll say anything. I mean, climate change. You look at the climate change scientists. I guarantee you, you took their money away and asked them honestly what was going on, they'd say, no, we're lying. You know, once you know, this is one, but as long as they're on the government payroll, they're going to come to the government conclusions. And the government conclusion is climate change. You know, get rid of fossil fuels that aren't fossil fuels. It's really abiotic oil made under the earth, but they're not going to tell you that. Because if everybody knew that oil was made naturally by the earth, and then we're not only not running out, the earth is making more of it all the time, you know, there'd be such an uproar. So they lie to you about climate change, take your oil away, make you pay, you know, upwards of $5 a gallon right now, and it's all for nothing. It's for nothing. Just because they don't like oil. So they're willing to sacrifice you, your future, your family, your transportation, your vacations, your weekends in the SUV. They're willing to sacrifice your commute. They're willing to sacrifice all that because they don't like oil. So they're making all your choices for you. That's a dictatorship, folks. That's what it looks like. All right. Back to the article. Recently, our organization at OpenTheBooks.com forced NIH. I already read that. Okay, fine. These payments occurred during the most recently available period, September 2009 to September 2014. See, that's too bad because the really interesting part starts around December 5th, starts around 2015. Okay, you know when Trump was starting to run, that's when it gets interesting. Okay, when Moderna was cranking up operations, 2017, when the head of Moderna, the chief doctor, said on a TED talk, we've hacked the software of life. So in other words, the design your own vaccine, design your own viruses, they knew how to do it in 2017. And when does COVID appear? 2019, 2 years later? Well, What a coincidence. Not really. Okay. Anyway, the production, this is back to the article. The production is the result of our federal lawsuit versus NIH. The agency admits to holding 3,000 pages of line-by-line royalties since 2009. Now, why would they hold back that information? Why would they hold back 3,000 pages of line-by-line? How do you even fill 3,000 pages of line-by-line royalties? That's a lot of lines. How many lines to page? 22? So that's 2, 3, that's 6. That's at least 60,000 right there, lines of royalty payments. Okay. So far, they've produced only 1,200 pages. The next 1,800 pages of production will cover the period 2015 to 2020, which is the interesting part because that covers COVID. All right. However, what the NIH has produced today gives us insight to undisclosed royalty largesse. For example, only 900 scientists were estimated to be receiving royalties. So now we know the universe is much larger. Since the NIH documents are heavily redacted, in other words, they've blacked out the good stuff, we can only see how many payments each scientist received and separately the aggregate dollars per NIH agency. This is a gatekeeping at odds with the spirit and perhaps the letter of open records laws. You think? You know, and he says, we found agency leadership and top scientists at NIH receiving royalty payments. Well-known scientists receiving payments during the period included one, Anthony Fauci, known affectionately here as Dr. Fascist, director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, NIAID, or NIAID, and the highest paid federal bureaucrat receiving 23 royalty payments. Fauci's 2021 taxpayer-funded salary, $456,028. 23 royalty payments, 23 shares of $350 million? That's got to be in the millions. Has to be. Francis Collins, NIH director from 2009 to 2021, received 14 payments. Collins' 2021 taxpayer-funded salary, $203,500. See, the real money is in the patents. The real money is in the in these things, in the royalties. That's what the money is. You know, these people don't go in. I mean, you know, Dr. Fascist makes almost $500,000 a year in salary. But that's not where the real money is. The real money is in royalties. Okay, the real money is in patents and license fees. That's where the money is. That's what they go into this for. And then, in fact, there's so much money. Here's what's interesting: Fauci made so much money in the NIH that even the most lucrative corporate job in big pharma didn't attract him. What does that tell you? What does that tell you when Dr. Fascist, who's been around since the 80s, since he was killing AIDS victims with AZT, probably killed Freddie Mercury. We did a whole show on that, right? So what would possess somebody to stick around that long in government, knowing full well that private enterprise is where the real money is? Well, maybe it's not. Maybe there's so much money in government now through these royalties and through these license fees and patents and things. There's so much money in government, it even exceeds what you can make in the private sector. That's a scary thought. Well, I mean, why is he still there? The guy makes $500,000. He'd probably make, $10 million if he was the head of Pfizer, which he could very well do, right? So why would he pass up being the head of Pfizer to stay in government at $500,000 when he could probably make $10 million easily with stock options, benefits, company car, vacation homes, things like that, if he were the head of Pfizer? Why would he do that? The only reason he would stay in government is that he makes more money than he would as head of Pfizer. And if that doesn't scare the hell out of you, then we got a problem. We need to talk. Okay. In fact, one of the bills I want to talk to you about with B. Thomas in the second and probably third hours is a bill I wrote in 2019 that mandates a 30-day public comment period for any bill over $100 million. So that would include Ukraine. That would include the NIH. It would include all the budget items. So the entire budget would be up for public comment. So the way the bill works is that once the bill is ready for final passage, in other words, it's been through the House, it's been through the Senate, they've amended, they've done conference, they've done all the things they're going to do. When they're voting for final passage, this is the bill that will be voted, no changes. Once that's done, that bill then goes to 30-day comment period. Well, then, of course, there can be changes afterwards. Congress can say, the public comment period has raised some issues that we didn't think of. At 3 o'clock in the morning when we tried to ram this through and nobody was looking. And that's the whole purpose of this, is to get these bills out in the open, when people aren't looking, because they're not going to see them at 3 o'clock in the morning. The Ukraine bill, had half an hour debate, maybe, it was just, here, vote this. You're a Democrat, vote for it, in the House. Of course, Nancy Pelosi is the only vote in the House. She controls all the Democrat votes, so she controls the House. If she wants a bill passed, the bill passes. Then it goes to the geldings, the Democrats in the Senate. And, of course, the geldings always comply with the Democrats because they don't want to be thought of as racists. And so they vote $40 billion for Ukraine. No debate. I mean, these bills go out, these massive – they'd send trillion-dollar stimulus bills through with no debate. Comes out, it shows up in the House or the Senate at 1 o'clock in the morning. They're half asleep. It's like, well, vote for it. Okay, fine. What's in it? Well, you'll find out tomorrow when we pass it. Yeah, okay, fine, no problem. And that's how they do it. It's really scary. All right, I'm going to play our Santa Rosa Volunteers piece for today. And I'm sort of clearing the last 2 hours. Again, I have no idea. I don't know if B can stay the whole 2 hours. We'll find out. It'd be nice. Every once in a while we do this. Like Thursdays, Jonathan and Cindy hang out for the entire rest of the show because we have such a good time doing it. So let me find my SRV, the Santa Rosa Volunteers piece, and I'll be working on the new Federalist Papers number 12 is the next one in our set. But I'm going to play you Anti-Federalist number 11 so you can see where we are, and then you can see where we're going. And I'll be back in a little bit. And again, Mama B, B. Thomas, will join us at the top of the hour. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, insights into our founding documents, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Anti-Federalist 11 was written under the pen name Agrippa, who was a Roman general under Emperor Augustus. Interesting choice. It is thought that Agrippa was James Winthrop from Cambridge, Massachusetts. This paper is actually an accumulation of excerpts from letters. So let me simply point out the highlights and develop a theme. The title under which this paper is recorded is Unrestricted Power Over Commerce Should Not Be Given the National Government. So let's focus on that primarily and leave out the other fluff that always accompanies these papers. Agrippa says, "It has been proved by indisputable evidence that power is not the grand principle of union among the parts of a very extensive empire. The common conclusion from this reasoning is an exceedingly unfair one, that we must then separate and form distinct confederacies. This would be true if there was no principle to substitute in the room of power. Fortunately, there is one. This is commerce. All the states have local advantages and in a considerable degree separate interests. They are, therefore, in a situation to supply each other's wants." If you read only the Federalist Papers, you will get one set of facts designed to lead you to only one conclusion, that without the Constitution, the country will fall into factions which will destroy the Union. However, when you read the Anti-Federalist Papers, all kinds of new information, evidence, arguments, and possibilities show up, which proves once again there are always other options. Agrippa then says, "The complaints of the deficiency of the congressional powers are confined to two articles. They are not able to raise a revenue by taxation, and they have not a complete regulation of the intercourse between us and foreigners. For each of these complaints, there is some foundation, but not enough to justify the clamor which has been raised." Whenever you hear intercourse, think commerce and trade, and it will all make sense. Agrippa is saying these are problems, but not enough problem to abandon the Articles of Confederation. Regarding the giving of power over all commerce to Congress and protecting the states, Agrippa says, "Three restrictions appear to me to be essentially necessary to preserve that equality of rights to the states, which it is the object of the state governments to secure to each citizen. First, it ought not to be in the power of Congress, either by treaty or otherwise, to alienate part of any state without the consent of the legislature. Second, they ought not to be able, by treaty or other law, to give any legal preference to one part above another. Third, they ought to be restrained from creating any monopolies." Agrippa counters the argument that the federal government has to standardize all commerce under the Commerce Clause by stating that having the states retain some authority over interstate commerce wouldn't be much of a problem. He says, "The new Constitution not only prohibits vessels bound from one state to another from paying any duties, but even from entering and clearing.
The only use of such a regulation is to keep each state in complete ignorance of its own resources. It certainly is no hardship to enter and clear at the custom house, and the expense is too small to be an object. Agrippa then says of the Constitution giving the feds all power over commerce. The unlimited right to regulate trade includes the right of granting exclusive charters. There ought then to have been inserted a restraining clause which might prevent the Congress from making any such grant, because they can consequently defeat the trade of the outports and are also injurious to the general commerce by enhancing prices and destroying that rivalship which is the great stimulus to industry. Agrippa knew well the value of competition. In the concluding paragraph, Agrippa sums up his objections to taking all commerce power from the states and between the states. There cannot be a doubt that, while the trade of this continent remains free, the activity of our countrymen will secure their full share. The credit of our merchants is, therefore, fully established in foreign countries. This is a sufficient proof that when business is unshackled, it will find out that channel which is most friendly to its course. We ought, therefore, to be exceedingly cautious about diverting or restraining it. Experience has shown that, instead of trying to lessen an evil by altering the present course of things, that every endeavor should have been applied to facilitate the course of law, and thus to encourage a mutual confidence among the citizens, which increases the resources of them all and renders easy the payment of debts. By this means, one does not grow rich at the expense of another, but all are benefited. And then Agrippa, in the last part, adds his analysis of human nature into the mix to again frame the argument against the Constitution. He says, "It is vain to tell us that we ought to overlook local interests. It is only by protecting local concerns that the interest of the whole is preserved. No man, when he enters into society, does it from a view to promote the good of others, but he does it for his own good. All men, having the same view, are bound equally to promote the welfare of the whole. To recur, then, to such a principle as that local interests must be disregarded is requiring of one man to do more than another, and is subverting the foundation of a free government." In that last sentence, it's quite clear that not only giving Congress the power over all commerce subverts the independence and sovereign rights of the states, but the entire Constitution does, which is the main argument of all the anti-federalist papers against rushing into a completely new form of centralized federal government. Their choice is amending the Articles of Confederation to keep the independence of the states while giving the federal government a better range of defined powers for the good of all the people. The source for the Federalist Papers is federalistpapers.org. The Anti-Federalist Papers are from selfeducatedamerican.com. The Articles of Confederation are from usconstitution.net. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website is srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it. This is Greg Penglis. So what is Action Radio? It is a radio show with its own citizen legislature. That's you, the listener. It is a fully interactive system of listeners, expert guests, social media, writing bills, legislator input, bill submission, lobbying, and citizen action. Action Radio is the future of talk radio, using all the available technology in one completely integrated new system.
You are listening to Action Radio Online with Greg Penglis. The webpage for all Action Radio shows and podcasts is blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Please share our show with all your friends and family, both nationally and internationally. The guiding principle of Action Radio is this: we the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed.
You know, just I'm just cracking myself up here, thinking that if B gets a regular feature here, her name is spelled B E A. So Mama B Thomas. I think I'll call the report to B or not to B. She's probably heard that a million times. I just thought of it myself, and I think it's kind of funny. All right, so I got a question. There's a pilot who landed a Cessna Caravan, which is a turboprop airplane, which is faster, more complex. It's got new computer whiz-bang stuff. It's not pressurized, so it doesn't fly too high, so you don't have to worry about that complication. But it's still a turboprop, and it's still an airliner, and it carries about 9 people. And it's a single engine, so that's one less thing to worry about, too. Twin engines are more complicated because you've got 2 engines. You know, it's great if you have one that has a problem. Yes, you can, you know, power back or shut it off or do things like that. You have a spare. But on the other hand, sometimes that can cause you more problems on takeoff. If you lose an engine on takeoff on a twin, it's much, much more dangerous than a single, because in a twin, you've got the option to go or land. In a single, you're a glider. All your decisions are made for you. Anyway, so the point is that a passenger is up there, and his pilot becomes incoherent. Okay. Well, you know me. I'm immediately skeptical of that, because, you know, I used to be a flight instructor. I'm going to be flying again. Someday, hopefully, when Action Radio gets more successful and I retake the skies in my personal jet, my little 2-seat military-style jet trainer known as the Viper Jet Mark II. Anyway, so I was wondering, what would cause a pilot to become incapacitated? Pilots are normally, especially on a Cessna Caravan, you're probably talking about a younger person, because, you know, the older people are flying big jets for the airlines, okay? So this is probably someone who's been a flight instructor, and they're now, you know, building up their hours. They're building up their turbine time, working on getting a jet job with the regional airlines and the major airlines. So we're probably talking, in fact, no information on the pilot's been released that I know of, but we're probably talking someone in 20s, 30s, maybe at the most. All right. So that's a young, healthy person. What would cause a young, healthy person to become incoherent all of a sudden? A COVID shot. A COVID shot would. What's being mandated for all pilots? COVID shots. How many pilots have died? I remember in 1 week, 4 British Airlines pilots died. Gee, what a coincidence. What caused that? COVID shots. Now, why are COVID shots particularly bad for airline or for pilots? Because you're flying in a reduced oxygen environment. Now, if you're a passenger, you're wearing a mask, it's even a further reduced oxygen environment. I've talked about how airline cabins are pressurized to 8,000 feet, not sea level. That air that you're breathing is not sea level air. It's 8,000 foot air. It's 3,000 feet above Denver. Okay, so you're up there. 8,000 feet is over a mile. You know, a mile is 5,280 feet, so 8,000 feet is like a mile and a half. So you're a mile and a half above sea level. That's a long way up. You know, and the air is kind of thin up there. You know, but your airliner may be flying at 35,000 feet, but inside the cabin it's like 8,000 feet, but it's not sea level. So pilots are in a situation where they're routinely going in lower oxygen environments. I did it as a flight instructor. I mean, I'd be up, you know, 5,000 feet back to the airport for next lesson. Ooh, up 5,000-6,000 feet, you know, back again. Then maybe up only 3,000 feet, you know, back again. Maybe only doing a bunch of takeoffs and landings, 1,000 feet, back again. The point being, I was up and down several different many thousands of feet per day as a flight instructor. Okay. Now, once you come back to Earth at sea level, you're going to kind of recharge the batteries. But if you stay up, the longer you stay up, the less your oxygen content is, and that's going to cause you a problem. Now, if you had a COVID shot and your lungs are full of blood clots, that's a whole different thing. So we need to find out. We need to find out if this is a COVID shot. And if it's a COVID shot, then we need to put people on recovery, on vaccine injury recovery. Dr. Artis had a whole thing. He talked about the glyphosate. Now, what was it? No, there was hang on, I've written down my notes here. You're supposed to get an infusion of something here. I know it's vitamin C, as much as you can take. Artist. Glutathione. I'm sorry. It's called glutathione. That's what you want to do. So glutathione is a thing plus vitamin C that's going to allow you So hopefully get as much vaccine recovery as you can. B. Thomas is on the line right now, which is great. I'm going to just talk for a couple more things. I think there's one more thing I wanted to talk about, and then I want to get to her. We're going to spend a lot of time, but this way she'll kind of get a feel for the show where we are right now. So the pilot, I think the pilot of that Cessna got a COVID shot, and I think that's what caused them to be injured. And they're not talking about it. If it was food poisoning, you'd know. If it was even a heart situation, you'd know. You know, if it was some kind of injury or something happened to them, or they bumped their head that morning and shouldn't have flown, you know, you're going to find out. The fact they're not saying what happened, as soon as you don't know, when somebody dies of quote, natural causes or a mystery, it's usually a COVID shot. That's my feeling. I mean, I can't prove it because they're not telling you. Brian Sicknick, the Capitol Hill police officer who died shortly after January 6th of two blood clots. You know, here's a guy in his young 40s, you know, police officer, healthy man. Drops dead of two strokes. Two strokes. Well, what causes strokes? Blood clots. What causes blood clots? COVID vaccines. The connection's there. So there's a big thing going on right now. I'm going to bring her on the line just because, before I get my official introduction, just in case she wants to say something on this issue, because this I find fascinating. So first of all, Mama B. Thomas, welcome to Action Radio. How you doing?
Good morning. Good morning. Good morning.
All right. You're early, but that's okay. That gives us more time to chat. Let me, before I give you my big drum roll and introduction, there's an issue here that's bothering a lot of people. It's on Facebook, so I can get your reaction to this right away, as well as the COVID shot to the pilot that I think is going on. And this is from Peter Bregan and Ginger Ross Bregan, husband and wife. They're just fascinating people. And it says, Biden handing over U.S. sovereignty to the WHO, the World Health Organization. And he says, on May 22nd to 28th, 2022, ultimate control over America's healthcare system and hence its national sovereignty will be delivered for a vote to the World Health Organization's governing legislative body, the World Health Assembly, the WHA. So now we got the WHO and the WHA, the WHA. He says, this threat is contained in new amendments. You know how the show goes, right? New amendments to the WHO. And now all we need is the WHY, you know, the WHY, the World Health Yippies. Anyway, so my concern and my is that Brandon, first of all, he's not even a legal president. I mean, he shouldn't be. He was put there by a coup. Presidents can't unilaterally give away our sovereignty. It's not a treaty, so it hasn't gone to the Senate. I think these people are really scared of something that they don't think they need to be scared about. And if worse comes to worse, he actually does sign some document. We could actually take it to the Supreme Court. God help us, they'll do something right this time. And say, look, this guy can't give away our sovereignty. Have you heard anything about this?
I heard a little bit, little about it, but as we know, okay, let's get real. We know there's some marbles missing upstairs in his head, you know? So he's cuckoo for Cocoa Pops. So what we're going to have to do is write new bills.
You're in the right place. You're in exactly the right place. Okay, let me give you the formal introduction as our guest of the day, hopefully to be a regular reporter, the one and only, let me press the button here, Mama B. Thomas.
Wow.
So I told the story in the first, wait, I got more. Believe me, I'll give you, I want to get you in here. So in fact, we can talk about this too. So I told the story in the first hour of how Mama B and I met the first time on a video. And I'm making this video with Donnie West, and we're sitting there in the rain, you know, in the back of the Fish House, this restaurant on the docks in Pensacola. And there's a woman kind of watching us and commenting and doing all kinds of stuff. And I said, why don't you join us for a video? Well, that was 4 years ago. And our paths had now crossed again. And here we are. Mama B. Thomas, welcome to Action Radio.
And good morning to everybody. And I feel so welcome. Thank you so much.
All right. Well, let's hear a little bit about you, because I know some, but there's probably a bunch of information you could tell me too as to what you're doing with Republican Party leadership and anything else you want to talk about. And then we're on to the awakening. I want to make sure we get that covered. And then anybody wants to call in, this is an open chat. So 215-383-3832. We're going to cover bills. We're going to cover issues. We're going to cover as much as we can in the time available. So please do that. We also have our live chat. We have the Skype line if you want to try that too. Anybody from calling around the world. We've got a lot of different ways you can get to us. And if you miss the show for any reason, it's all podcast. And so everything will be podcast by about 9:05 our time, or about 5 minutes after the show ends. So let's hear a little about you. What's your story? How did you come to be B? I'm sorry, I could have fun with that all day.
Well, first of all, starting out in the political arena, I was a intern working, trying to go between school and trying to learn how to work with young people. I had a big Sunday school class, and I always had about 30 to 40 in the Sunday school class, but I was a young teenager. But I just love teaching. I love doing things like that. And so I just decided that, okay, I get into some things without studying what's going on, really. So I became a person who was hardcore Democrat until I started reading books from the 1800s all the way up until the 1900s. And then I started really studying things. And at the age of, I think I was approximately about 24 years old. But I was married. I married young and was very stupid when I got married. And so studying things about life itself. And so it was just to learn. I was learning how to drive. Let's go back a little bit. I was learning how to drive. And my daddy had a 1964 convertible Chevrolet.
Oh, don't you wish you still had that? I bet you do.
I do. But me and my sister shared with each other, but she was scared to drive. So I take my daddy, the one that he gave us, and we get on the highway, and we going through, leaving from Pensacola into Mississippi. And when we got in Mississippi, I turned on the wrong road. And it was a dirt road. We were scared to death. Our eyes were big as a teacup. You know, you always could see it's the white part of it. She was just afraid. And so when I was further in there to turn around, and this was in the 80s, they was in the field. They were still in the fields working. And I never seen anything like that before in my life. And I asked, I said, what is going on here? And we were just thinking about the cotton, how beautiful it was and things like that. And I asked the question, I said, how did we get out of here? And the way they was talking backwards. And I'm saying, oh, my sister thought it was hilarious, but I didn't think it was hilarious. I really didn't. And I'm coming back to a lot of memories of what happened with me coming up as a teenager. And so when we got through with all that, getting ourselves back where we supposed to be and had violated the curfew of being home, and didn't even know common sense, and you just got a one-way road going in and out, then you know that you're in trouble. So we tried to get back to Pensacola, Florida. We finally got back to Pensacola. My daddy was working late anyway, so it wasn't like a really big deal. But I started learning about what's going on in America. I was just fascinated with a globe. I would love to spin a globe around and think about I'm going to be at this place and that place and this place and that place. And I just grew up in a home where it was strict, it was discipline, and it was abuse.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So when I started all of this craziness, I just said, I need to study something about me, about what I'm going to do in life. I read on the other side of the brain. So when I got ready to get into all those crazy stuff, I passed through all of those crazy methods of doing things and being young, fast, and crazy. So when I got through with all of those crazy stuff young teenagers do, the hurt, the pain, try to commit suicide, all this crazy stuff.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But God, I survived. And I was just wondering why people still in the same rut that they in. And I started
conditioning. Conditioning is what I think. But anyway, go ahead.
No, cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs backwards at that time. And I didn't realize I was going to be in that same mold if I kept on going like I were. So when I finally realized something, I had an idea. My father was a Baptist preacher, very strict Baptist. And you're not aware, you're not allowed to wear pants or anything like that. You just had to be plain and simple. And so when I asked the question about what was going on in the world and why we still doing the same old thing over and over again, y'all go to Alabama, you go to the feed store, we standing in line at the commodity line. There's a certain amount of food that you had to get, like cheese, block of cheese, big can of peanut butter, and all this stuff. And you had to stand there, like, all day long. I mean, all day. And then my mind was thinking it was just a chain game. We got to grab for the food, and you can't take too much, and your children hungry. By the time before the month is out, you're out of food. So it was just like we pinching and strapping. And at that time, I think my mom had about maybe four or five children. But I was the mama. When she had a baby, I had the baby. In my lifetime, what is going on with me? Because things that I do, the things that I grew up in, I was different from school. I was abused in school. I was so different than other children. I was right backwards. I was doing Hebrew and didn't know it. And so it was just like you getting beat, you know, you bring your lesson. How do you get the answers? The teachers asked me, how do you get those answers without solving the problem? Show me how to solve the problem before you give me the answers. And there's my knuckles on the table, and you're getting beat. Then you get home, and she writes this letter to your mom, and you can't explain it. And then you know, just like it was so different for me down through the years, and then I finally realized something. I thought about the cotton field in Mississippi, Alabama. I thought about the food and stuff like that, and I thought about, my mom would send things over. They had this thing that you send your canned goods and stuff over into Africa, and she would do that from the school. We don't know how to canny, how to eat, and they were sending this stuff like that. And then, so when I thought about all these things, it started boiling up in my head. I couldn't comprehend. So the things that I look at, other people couldn't see, because I had the answer, the abuse time. Then they tell you to stand on your head, get your brains back, because they thought my brains was messed up in the head or whatever. And so you stand on your head for about an hour or two, and you get off of there and they say, read the book. And you still have not came back into the right way for me. So, I mean, this was just all out crazy. So when I got older, I hid a lot of things because I didn't want the teachers to know. I thought I was going to be beaten again. So in high school, it was just crazy. It was a lot of things. And when I started going to Pensacola Junior College, it was things like that messed me up, you know, a lot of things. And I end up getting married and all these crazy things that I was doing.
Yeah, marriage is pretty crazy. I tried it once. I can't recommend it.
No. And then, you know, you really look at this, you wonder, you talk too down, saying you'll never amount to nothing, and you'll be killed before you get to age of 20. Somebody's going to kill you. Or you'll not amount to nothing. Or you sit outside and eat. Don't eat with everybody else. Even at Christmas time, they got gifts. I didn't get nothing but a pair of socks. So it was just like the hurt of going through and trying to find myself. When I first got into politics, I realized after studying so long, and I was working on a Title 20, and I left Title 20 to go and to be in daycare. I started out in daycare. That was my first little job that I loved it to do, in daycare. But when it's time for to do artwork and whatever, they will put me on that board and let me do all of that illustration, you know, everything in cartoons and all that characters. I would do all of that without even thinking with a flash. And it would be illustrated just like it's real. And so I started doing that. Mount Lily Fellowship Hall. I never will forget that. Then I thought about a lot of more things that's going through my mind. What is wrong with me? You know, why I'm like this? Why nobody want to play with me? And why every time when they ask something, I can see it before it really happens?
Mm-hmm.
So what I did, I decided to sit there and study. So, well, a trip came up, and I never forget it. They wanted to go to Title 20 and protest Title 20. At that time for the education department. And I had got, they sent me through Mount Liddy Fellowship Hall to go with a lady named Ola Moore. She's way older than me. I was just young. And I'm go with her, and I got a chance to really shake hands with Walter Mundell.
And interesting.
And when they looked at the Title 20, and some of the things they had in the Title 20, she would ask me and she would write it down and she would present it, but I had to stay silent because they didn't really want a young person to say anything. You know, I had the Title 20 mapped down to where I felt like it should have been into the education system, but to change some of the laws on it. And so when it came back to do the presentation at home, she took all the credit for it, and she took all the pictures and everything. So really, I was
been there.
Hard to soften knot to a hard knot to soften knot. So then, after all of this stuff, all of these things and changes in my life,
mm-hmm.
it was always me labeled of being nothing. So I had to really educate and school myself that I am somebody. And then I realized that I needed something in my life that was missing. I'm the mother of one child, but I have a total of 47 godchildren.
Wow.
Okay, 47. They respect me. They know Mama B will not play with them, including Senator Rick Scott. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So they know I will not play with them. But I was not brought up to be prejudiced or evil. But I had it in my heart of what was happening with me. See, the story goes in this film that I'm in of what happened to my grandfather in the years as my mother came up. And the reason why I was an outsider fighting other relatives to stay off of this prejudice issue. My grandfather of my mother got shot when she was 7 years old.
Wow.
My grandmother got killed when my mother was 9 months old. But it was a different type of killing. My father was in the store, came from furlough, to get her a coat, and they looked in the window, and somebody said some man had stole a chicken. The police department at that time in those days, in the 30s, they were looking for this chicken man that stole this chicken out of somebody's yard. And the guy pointed to my grandfather, and they shot him. And they left him on the ground. For days, my mother said, for days, and they just study shopping, and they just walk right on by him. And she didn't understand that. Now, that could be mind-blowing to a seven-year-old. So that's probably why so many things happen in my life. But later on, time go by, he turned around and tell her, write a letter on his deathbed. Now, think about it. The family members hated police officer then.
Mm-hmm.
The family members thought that everybody was, the white man was something else. The white man didn't do this and didn't do that. Back in those days, really, to be honest about it, black people did not do the things that they're doing now.
Mm-hmm.
But they had hidden hate. So by my mother, and the way it was told to me, that when they bought the paddy wagon to pick him up, he had laid on that ground so many days. She couldn't name the days. So when she get the letter, this is just really sad to me. When my mother get the letter to tell that, ask for forgiveness because this man was on his deathbed. This was 50 years later.
Mm-hmm.
Those that died of hate. They wasn't told the truth. So you understand where I'm coming from. So this, why I'm in this field that I'm in now, feel like the closure will be the journey to make a difference. What learned me how to make the difference in life was my students that are artistic, blind, and deaf. So I started into teaching all of my life. And so dealing with the military, dealing with all kind of issues, I learned how to grip myself up and make sure that I make a difference for what's going on in America. Now I'm into another decimal now where America is in trouble. And people have to get their heads together and write these laws and stick with it and mean exactly what they say when they get sworn in to represent you in America.
Mm-hmm.
We got so many loopholes until we don't really, America was beautiful, okay? America was, we had coming up saying that 400 years ago. Hell, I went in 400 years ago. Okay, let's be honest. You was not in 400 years ago. So how can you label what happened 400 years ago to now? Just let you think about it. Did you get anywhere?
No, I agree.
They didn't have but mules and horses and stuff like that. Now you got cars, planes, all of these kind of stuff to travel with. I mean, you know, railroads done up in a matter of time now. So why would I hate you? Why would I put hate in you to label you as one of my enemies when I'm my enemy myself? So this is why I'm saying it's a lot to be said about Mama B. Mm-hmm. I done been through a great deal, but I do not judge you for what you do to me. I have to be responsible for what I do to you. So this is why I am a firm believer of changing the things that they have labeled in others' minds. Write it. The documentary of writing and making a difference. God gave you wisdom, knowledge, and understanding. You know, some that you look at is very different than you. And some you look at is just like you in some ways. But you don't have the same fingerprint. So that's why it's different in America. Twins is twins, but they have a different fingerprint. So, see, this is why I'm saying about the ideals. Ideals ain't what for flip. You can do all these ideals in your mind. What it's called is called imagination of the mind. But when you put your mind together on what you're doing, the mind is the heart of the whole body. It's not what's pumping. The pump will keep it going because the mind will help the heart to keep going. You cannot do without a head. So can't nobody say that I'm walking around with no head. That's not true. I mean, the head.
Well, some people are walking around with them, but they're not using it. That's a whole different story.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. And so that is why I am, and it's just like this. I didn't call myself Mama B. You know who calls me that? It started from older people to younger people. And then always I get mad. I would get so angry when they say, Mama, Mama B, can you tell us this? And I said, what I look like your mama? I mean,
this is why you're on the show.
From?
Yeah. Well, what would you like? What would you like to be called? What would you like to be called?
No,
how should I address you?
Let me tell you how it started. Let me tell you how that started.
Oh, please.
When
do.
They called me Mama, I would get mad. So I went to talk to a priest, and he called me Mama. I said, "Why did you say that, sir?" I said, "I really want to know." And he said, because you got a mother knowledge, and that's a good thing, because you love unconditional. That's why. And so I realized that even my students used to say, Mom, Mom B. If they can speak it, they'll say it. If not, they'll do it in signing. And then I said, okay. All right. So I'm Mama. All right, so you want a mama? You're going to get a good mama. So when they start out, they graduate, and I come back and visit all of them, try to. Some have left this earth, but I try to come and visit them. And believe me, I have accepted that, and I love it. So I am Mama B. So how
That's
about them now?
Then that's a pretty good apple. Let's give you a round of applause.
Oh gosh!
I get buttons here. I can do amazing things. The only thing I'm thinking is our my mic and your phone might be a little different in volume. I don't know if you can get a little closer or just amplify it slightly, because folks are going to be using their volume up and down a little bit as they're listening. That's the first thing. That's the minor thing. The important thing is that you and I have so much in common. It's no accident that we've been brought together now. I mean, you know, in God's plan for how this is all working. And I was never very much of a religious person until, well, just last few years especially. You know, the expression let go and let God. And in my case, it's really let go and just hang on, because Action Radio is on its own course. I'm just here kind of watching and sort of, you know, supervising and guiding. But what's happening here is way beyond me. It's way beyond. This is going to be a worldwide movement of people deciding. They decide to write what laws they consent to be governed by. And that is going to be a revolution. I absolutely predict it. And I absolutely think that you're going to be a huge part of it. It's no accident that we're, you know, together on the show at this time. The similarities we have in our life is very striking, and yet we started out from completely different places. You know, you're a black woman, and I'm a white guy. So you look at us, we're completely different, but we're not. We're incredibly the same. My family, although I was never physically abused, was incredibly mentally and emotionally abusive. I heard what you heard. You're never going to amount to anything. You're never going to have a career. You're an idiot. Look at all the smart people around you doing really great things. You're never going to do that. So I became an overachiever. Okay. So I learned to play music, and my parents forced me to play piano, which I absolutely sucked at and hated. And then I wanted to be Herb Alpert, a kid in the 60s, you know, a little like 8 or 9 years old. I wanted to be Herb Alpert. You know, he was the man. All right. And so I finally got them to buy me a trumpet, and I sucked at that too. It was pretty bad, but I don't give up. I mean, I never give up. All right. So I was going to find an instrument somehow. And I was in Australia at the time. I was 10 years old. I think it was about 10 years old. And my Australian band director, he looks at me and says, Pangloss. He was Dutch, right? Very strong Dutch accent. Pangloss, you are never going to be a trumpet player. And I'm like, oh, here we go again, right? I've heard this all my life. He says, but you could be a good tuba player. You have big lips. I'm like, okay, fine. This is what he tells me, right? He says, I'm going to get you a tuba. Sit here. And so he brings out this enormous piece of metal. It's the largest horn I've ever seen in my life. It was bigger than me. I'm 10 years old. I'm a little kid, right? So he sits me down, and if you looked at me from the front, all you'd see were like two hands and two knees, and that would be it. The rest of it would be behind this tuba, this enormous piece of metal. Well, I had more fun with that in half an hour than any instrument I'd ever played in my life. And I went on to play for the next 11 years all the way through college, and actually ended up with a trombone solo, which I played on tuba, on a sousaphone, on my knees, in front of about 20,000 people at the University of Massachusetts. So all it takes is one person to believe in you. You know, it's the person that says, you can't do this, but why don't you try this? And then I realized a world of opportunities and a world of alternatives. I also realized I could do things that I didn't think I could do. That was the first thing. Second thing was, I actually managed to convince my father to get me a flying lesson, because from the age of 5, I wanted to be an airline pilot. I wanted to do the Air Force thing and then fly for the airlines. I mean, that was my goal, my dream, and I did everything I could, except I didn't realize the amount of betrayal and sabotage that was in my family. They were never going to let me, you know, be happy no matter what. And then the airlines, of course, went broke and a bunch of other things happened. So I never quite made it. But I'm still going to fly jets one day. You know, I want my Blue Angels ride. You know, I want to go fly upside down at supersonic speeds. I want to do some really cool stuff. And so I intend to have my own jet as part of the fun of doing Action Radio. We do good work, but we also reward ourselves and have – and I want my convertible too. I want a 1967 Pontiac Firebird, cobalt blue, white interior, leather, the whole bit, walnut green, you know, dash panel, the whole bit. So I got a couple of toys.
Wow.
Anyway, but the point – yeah, we're going to go for a ride. We're going to go ride down the beach, you and me. We're just going to be down in my Firebird, you know, with the top down, you know, our hair streaming back, the wind in our face. We're going to be like, this is really cool. There goes Mama B and Greg. There's Action Radio. You know, it's going
to
be fun.
I think I'm going to get a blonde wig to do all that, honey.
What do you want a blonde wig for? No, you look great just the way you are. I wouldn't change a thing.
Where the hell can this come right on through and fly all over the place?
Yeah, let the hair go. Let the hair go wild. Get the breeze. Get the sea breeze. Get that salt air. We're going to have a great time. Okay. But the point is that you and I have basically been through a very similar thing. Now, I was raised in 3 different countries. Okay. So I was a minority of one, you know, from the age of 8 years old. You know, when I went to Australia. Now, at least they were English-speaking countries, so I had a fair handle on it. But I went from a, you know, Canadian government public school to an Australian private school. You know, I looked like Angus, what's his name, of AC/DC. I had the school uniform, you know, I had the jacket with the crest, I had the little hat, I had the whole bit. You know, so then that's what I – and then I went from there to an American public school, and that was culture shock. So I was different. Now, here's where it gets really strange. And I've told this story before, but I was different because here I am an Australian. I'm an Australian. Actually, I was Canadian, but my last country was Australia. I spoke with an Australian accent. G'day. How's it going? You know, I mean, I had a really strong Australian accent, okay? Because I've been there 4 years. So I picked up the – and so I came to the United States as – and I'm looking – and I went to Lexington Junior High. So here I'm in Lexington, Massachusetts, you know, birthplace of American liberty, you know, the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, you know, all the good folks. And I've heard a little bit about the United States, but I really didn't know anything about it. I had a globe too, by the way, which is when you're talking about your globe. I recently picked up a globe at a garage sale, and I'm going to do a video on it because it's fascinating. Kids don't know where they are. They have no idea about the world. They have no idea where they are. Anyway, so I knew where I was because, you know, so to me, the United States before I got here was this, you know, it was colored pink. And then Canada was like green, the United States was pink, and, you know, Mexico was blue or whatever it was. Anyway, so these different countries had different colors. So that's all I knew about the United States because in Australia and Canada, I say Canadian history, Australian history, British history. The United States really didn't figure into it, which would be kind of a surprise to Americans. So I get here in 1972. And guess what's going on in Boston in 1972? Busing. Okay, so busing has started. So Judge Garrity had this plan that he wanted to take city black kids and bring them to white suburban schools. And, of course, Lexington was one of the ones they did this to. So there's a big conflict going on. And the school is divided. You got the black students, you got the white students. Now, to me, I don't see color. I don't see race. None of this, you know, makes – all I saw was Americans, all right? And yeah, black Americans, white Americans. But I made a distinction that skin color meant anything because in Australia it didn't. I didn't grow up with the concept of race. It meant nothing. Not only did it mean nothing, it wasn't even in my language. There was no word race in my language. And so I come to the United States, and I'm like, you know, oh, this is interesting. The black kids hate me apparently because I'm white. The white kids hate me apparently because I'm Australian. And I'm looking at Americans, and the black kids and the white kids aren't getting along. I'm like, why is that? You're all Americans. What's your problem? So I'm looking at this very strangely from very strange. I had to learn about the racial history of this country. I had to learn about slavery and segregation and Jim Crow and all the things we hear about today. I had to learn about this. And now we've got – well, let me ask you something. Here's a question for you of our many questions that we can talk about. It seems like we've gone from a situation of punishment, segregation punishment, to segregation privilege, affirmative action. Kids in schools with lower SAT scores, guaranteed extra subsidies, grants, scholarships, things like that. Special privileges for special groups. both of these set us apart from each other. If you punish a group or if you give a group a privilege, you're doing something very damaging to this country, because you're creating a situation where we're not all equal. We're not judged equally. We're not judged, as Martin Luther King said, by the content of our character, which is critical. Absolutely critical. We can talk about that too. But this is a situation I found myself in, where all of a sudden I'm seeing all these differences here in this weird kind of strange world. And so when people say, well, you don't know what it's like to be a minority, you're a white guy. Oh, let me tell you, I know what it's like to be a minority of one. And so I had to do my own thing, like you had to do your thing, of self-accomplishment. How do I feel good about myself? Well, I played tuba and I flew airplanes. That's what saved me. Back to you, B. That's quite a mouthful.
And you know what, though? But you will study at a pace where you want to do better.
Mm-hmm.
It was more to life than what it seemed like and what was said to you. And then when you finally look in the mirror, you don't like what you see at first.
Yeah.
But you got to talk back to that mirror and say, I know I can do this. You know, I know I can do this. I can do this.
Mm-hmm.
And once you get that, first of all, getting into the Word of God will help you. Because there's so many mysteries in the Bible. I don't care how many times you read it. You can read the Bible 10,000 times. You're still going to find something in there that's going to set what you're going through.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had to get really close to God. And I realized I had a friend. I never forget this. Her name was Liz Picard. And she was in her 80s. And she would tell me this. She would say, B, I think with your gift, which is so unique, I think you need to go to California.
Huh.
And I got friends there that can get you into the characters of drawing characters and different things like that. And she did introduce me to these people, but I was afraid, going on the other side from difference with being in Florida, going to Alabama, going to Mississippi, these southern states. So you mm-hmm. can get stuck in your mind that, oh, if I go there, I won't have nobody. And, all these things, because you're young. You don't, that's just an experience for you. And she was going to do all of that and pay for all of that for me. Even though it was stuck in my mind that you're not going to be any good, you ain't going to do this and you ain't going to do that and all this stuff. So you have to override that. Sometimes I think about it, where would I have been if I would have done that? But then when I started thinking about really deeply down inside, I remember me teaching a student that was self-inflict wounds on herself. And I blocked it one day, and she hit me, and it was like, wow, like it would have broke my hand how strong she was. I didn't realize that. She wasn't no bigger than about 70 pounds, and I'm like, woo, that hurt.
Hmm.
But when I realized and started sitting down with her and started working things with her, her mother couldn't get her to do certain things. So I would make cartoon characters out of her and me. And I would make her look at her face, how she be doing when she hitting and clapping herself. And I'm going to say, oh, no, don't hit B. I would not be blocking nothing from you. And she just be laughing. It was funny to her. She would be laughing, and she would want me to do that every day. And I would practice that with her every day, how to sit down, how to act good at the table. Don't show out. Don't take the vacuum cord and wrap it around your neck and all of this stuff. And then when I started doing that with her, I began to illustrate it, what it felt like and what it hurts if something hurt you and how dangerous it is. Then I started realizing that I say, in a normal way, we're all like that. We feel like when we're at our end of our rope
mm-hmm.
and people don't understand us and we're trying to get it together, we have to realize that we are unique people. And we have to put love into it, even though it hurt now. even though it hurt, like you saying with the plane and trumpet and all that, mm-hmm. even though it hurts you, you got to win that battle. And I think
that's
why a lot of things is trapped inside the human mind
mm-hmm.
that further enough, because when we're getting there, we withdraw back. But now I'm just like, you know, was it worth it? Yes, it was worth it. Yes, of course. You give yourself a big check because of the check mark, you know, because you overcome it. And now we are where we are, because I can guarantee you this, on this radio station, I never would imagine that you had that clipping of me. And
the video.
And when you say, Mama B, somebody I just love. I love this woman. I love her and her husband. I love her. And I wouldn't even be talking about this if it wasn't for Patty, really, to be honest about it. Everything
well, she may be on the line. She may be on the line right now. I've got a caller here.
I love her.
You know,
and my sister, Sandy Owens, I would have never thought of none of this on anything. When Patty was telling me about this, I was down about some things, you know? And when mm-hmm. Patty came to meet me, she said, let's have lunch. I said, okay. In my mind, I was praying. I said, Lord, I want this. I'll have lunch with her, but I know what she wants. And so when I walked in the place, she came in behind. She was just beautiful, just gorgeous. And she said, let's talk about this systematic deception thing. You know what she had with her in her hand? She had a notebook pad and a pen. That's what she had in a purse. And she sat down and we ordered lunch. And she said, I'll tell you about this good, delicious meal. And we ordered it. Her mind was focused, and like she had felt me inside. It was just unusual. Like you two guys, that day when I met you two, I looked at that bit, oh, my God. I'm saying, what do you have on me? I looked like Auntie Mamie on the grid box. I'm sitting in between two white men.
Yep.
And now talking about something about whatever, and I'm going, what in the world am I doing?
And we made a video of it, too.
But listen to this.
Okay.
And both of you all, I'm conservative.
Right.
And both of you at that time was Democrat.
No, I wasn't. No, I was actually, I'm way beyond conservative from most Republicans. You look at some of the bills we write and things we talk about here. But it may not come across that way.
Look at the video that you had did with me, and I'm saying, now, what am I doing with these two? Because I remember you asked that question about the Democrats and stuff. So I'm thinking, I'm in a sandwich here without what I'm doing. What was I doing? And then you say, well, Congressman Ron DeSantis will be up next, and Matt Gaetz will be up next. And I'm thinking about, what in the world? And I forgot all about it. And how long that been?
Oh, it's about 4 years.
And Patty was telling me. Patty sent the information to me. And when, it was so funny, when you were telling me that, I'm going, huh? Yeah, I'm going to send it to me. And then you cracked up for a whole hour laughing at that.
I did. I'm still laughing
That's
at it.
Funny.
Let's get to our caller now. All right, go ahead.
But listen to this. Mm-hmm. God has a way of putting his people back together again.
Oh, no kidding.
We crossed paths at that time at the fish house, and it was raining.
That's good for the fish. Yeah.
You know, but it's so unique. It's so unique. I could tell you this about everything. We have the most unique people that I ran across.
This is a very special area. There's something unusual happening here because the amount of people that come to this show, different expertise. I've got someone who wants to be an investigative reporter, and I'm big on giving opportunities. I do what you do. You know, you're part empath, part teacher, and I know exactly why you do it. You do it because in your background, you had all these opportunities taken from you, and you want to pass on to other people, especially younger folks, you know, that they don't have to suffer what you suffered, that they don't have to have your limitations, that they don't have to, you know, be thought of, that they can't do anything. And I talk to young people all the time. Fortunately, I've had a part-time job for a while where I get to talk to younger folks, and it's fascinating to sort of get their input on things. A lot of them don't have ambition. They don't have a sense of adventure. They don't have the things that I had, you know, as a younger person. I mean, I went to Europe for 3 months by myself just to go tour around because nobody would go with me. So rather than say, oh, well, I guess I can't go, you know, I got my airline ticket. You know, it was my graduation present from college from my folks who were divorced at the time. You know, one gave me the flight over, the other gave me the flight back. It worked out really well, right? So I spent 3 months in Europe by myself. It was the best education you could possibly have, but I had no fear. You know, and this is the thing that happens when you grow up with the background that we had of the adversity, of the things that you're told you can't do, and then all of a sudden you find you can do it, you get a great sense of fearlessness. And that fearlessness is going to translate into action. On Here We Are Action Radio. Now the caller I have, I don't recognize this number. Normally, once you call, I have like a master phone bank of everybody that calls. So I know who calls. So I know who I don't want to hear from again. You know, if you're a bad call, you don't get back. But I don't think that's the case now. But I don't recognize this number. So let's bring on our caller. Welcome to Action Radio. And first name and where are you calling from? Or do you know? Are you part of our group here already? Who we got? 251 area code. Are you a listening person? You're on the air. Going once. Be a good caller.
Alabama.
Be a good caller because you're not a good caller. You don't come back. So, caller, go ahead. Who's in?
Rachel Wagner.
Rachel. Okay.
Rachel! Yeah. Oh, my God.
Well, there you go.
Good morning.
Obviously, you guys chat. Okay, so let's find out who Rachel is, and welcome to Action Radio.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Moby.
Rachel?
Yes, ma'am.
Hi, sweetheart.
How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. You know, I told her, I texted her and told her that I would try to get her in at 7:20. I apologize to you, Rachel. Please tell the audience who you are and how we met. And it's fantastic. And she's running for office. And she's running for office not in Florida. So, Rachel, you own have it.
Well, let's just give a round of applause, first of all. And that's for running for office and taking on the challenge. And I want to hear your story now.
Well, I live in a small town called Wilmington, Alabama. I'm running for school board, District 4, here in Escambia County, Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
And I had the privilege of meeting Ms. Thomas. This past week, she walked into my ice cream shop, not knowing it was mine, saw my flyer, was making her way around our town, passing out flyers for her event tonight, and ended up receiving my phone number from another individual that I knew in town, and she called to talk to me, not knowing I was having a terrible day.
I'm sorry.
And she, encouraged me. She prayed with me. She was very uplifting to me. And then she came back yesterday to see me in person. And so we met for the first time yesterday. And she is just an absolute wonderful person, someone I hope that I know from here on out. And just, you just feel like a better person when you walk away from speaking with her.
Oh, I told Mama B, she's a national treasure already. I mean, this woman is magic. And so, like I said, I don't think it's any accident that our paths have crossed here at Action Radio. But I'm curious about, first of all, what's the name of your ice cream shop? Let's get a plug in here so we can all go visit.
It's Raybo's Sweets and Trading Post. Sits on the Alabama-Florida line. So if you're going from Montgomery to Pensacola, you drive right by it.
Okay. Well, I'll have to drop in sometime. This is great. So what possessed you to run for school board?
Well, several factors. We have a school board here that does not have any parents on the school board. I say doesn't have any. I think we have one
who still has children in school, but most of our school board here is retirees. So I began to question how much interest do they truly have in our children.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them have been on this school board for many years, and we all know the longer you stay, the more comfortable you get.
Yep.
And so I just decided it was time for a change. It was time for someone different. And so sought some help of other people I have that are in political offices,
mm-hmm.
and I got on the ballot.
Good for you. Congratulations. This is wonderful. Oh, and B, if you have more surprises for me, you know, feel free to text me the number and their first name. So I know they're actually part of the show, and I don't have to do...
I didn't...
don't worry about it. It's funny.
I told her I was going to bring her on, and also it's another gentleman name is... let me get his name.
Okay, don't tell me the phone number. We don't do phone numbers on the air. I'll have to delete the whole show.
You know, that will never happen with Mom B. His name is Scotty Stewart. And okay. I don't know if Scotty's listening on the radio or not. But I'm going to tell you something about this ice cream shop.
Uh-huh.
When you get to
do.
That ice cream shop, you are uh-huh. not going to be able to leave out of there.
Yeah, we should probably do a show from there. We should probably do a video. You and I... Mom B, we have to go visit people. We have to go meet and do a little video
That's
ourselves.
That's what it's all about.
Oh, yeah.
Once you engage with someone, mm-hmm. you engage with them. Let me say something. When
sure.
I start out, first of all, let's get into the political thing about
mm-hmm.
what happened. When politicians or whoever come in to run for office, they come to Mama B. Or either I would go to them, but 90% chance somebody send them to me.
Hmm.
Okay. Now by Rachel Beauty Shop over there passing out the thing for the program on tonight,
right.
which then we have, which is called Awakening. It's based upon the conservatives coming together, black conservatives, telling what have happened in America from different areas, not all of Florida,
mm-hmm.
telling what have happened and why we are in this problem today. You have Alveda King in that. You have President Trump. You have Congressman Matt Gaetz in that. But the cast of them that are in there is Alan Wett. You
okay.
have him in there. You have Keisha King. She's going to be singing tonight. So you got all, and Lisa Babbitt, you got all of these people that are in that film. Some of them will be in Pensacola tonight at the Wahoo
Wonderful.
Stadium. The
Wonderful.
That's $5. I want to make sure everybody know that. That's $5 if you could get them when you arrive there. So bring on a whole guest. Just bring your friends, whoever. Your eyes will come open to truth. That's all I'm saying about that for right now.
Mm-hmm.
But, okay, that ice cream shop, oh, my God. I'm going to send you the clipping of that banana split.
Oh, my goodness.
I wanted to stay in the shell of the ice cream and lay across in this lick all day long.
Oh,
but
my
I
goodness.
Know that's what's not going to happen. It's a mind-blowing thing. And guess what they have? All antique things back in the day.
Oh, you got the old fixtures? Do you wear those funky little hats?
Yes,
you know, those
yes,
little...
Yes,
those,
yes.
this is
well,
great.
You would
so you got the old
it.
Soda fountain? You got the old milkshake machines? Okay, I'm going.
We're going to
do a huge video.
They
you know,
have
I'm,
things like...
Uh-huh.
They have things like a little old slot machine they had in the little days. And they have the bottles, the old bottles, and
right.
all of the good stuff, and nice, and they're so sweet. They're so nice. Her husband is so nice, such a genius. That's such a sweetheart. And however you want your banana split to be done up,
mm-hmm.
it's nothing like they do at these stores. I'm not trying to knock nobody. But I ate the whole thing yesterday.
Oh, my goodness.
I ate the whole big ship. Yep.
Rachel, you have to name the Mama Bee banana split. You'll have to designate a special one. You'll have to create a new one. You know, it's funny. I'm surprised Pianchi hasn't called. We have one of our callers who loves food, and one of our friends is Alan Dawson. He's a tour guide in Belize. And so Belize, you know, he's a friend of mine. I met when I was working for a singles cruise company. And we met a couple of times. And so Alan's a regular on the show. And the minute he talks about food, Pianchi calls in and says, "What are you serving today?" So we get all these Belize specials and things like that. So the minute you start with that, I know he's listening. I know he just hasn't called in yet, but I know he's listening. And so we're going to get his viewpoint there. Are there any new flavors? Let's talk ice cream for a minute because this is fun. When's the last time a new flavor was created? What are some of the recent concoctions?
They got one called the hurricane or something with cane in it.
Let's find out. Rachel?
We don't have the hurricane, but we do have four or five different things that we've created ourselves along with 32 flavors.
Wow, you created 32 flavors? Yeah, let's hear some new kinds of ice cream. This is fascinating. See, the things we cover here, everything's fair game. I love it. Then I got a tough question for you.
Let's say our most popular is the salted caramel truffle.
Uh-huh.
We carry the old-fashioned orange pineapple, which is a favorite among our older people that come in.
Uh-huh.
Because you can't find it anymore.
Huh.
Praline pecan, and then another older one, butter pecan, stuff like that. And then, of course, we have the traditional, the Rocky Road, you know, moose mm-hmm. track.
That's the one
moose
someone
track.
Asked for yesterday. That's it.
Okay.
That's it.
This is funny. Do you make your own? Do any of these flavors you make yourself there on the premises, or do you make all of it yourself?
No, it's provided to us through Hershey's.
That's actually really good ice cream. Yeah. We should get Hershey to sponsor our show now that we've mentioned their name. Okay, let me ask you. Hey, listen, I'm trying to get some support for Action Radio so we can do better what we do. Let me ask you a question. Then I don't know if B told you exactly how. Well, I'll tell you really quickly. This is the most unique show in the world today. We are the only one with a citizen legislature. We actually write bills. A lot of times we write them right on the air with callers. And I've done that. One of our best ones when I was back at WBY was the mandatory citizenship question on the census. We've worked on all kinds of different bills. We had term limit bill worked on here. We work on things all the time. Pianchi wrote his bill, separating federal and state ballots. Josie, her bill on fingerprint ID, kind of like Disneyland thumbprint. You know, a lot of these were written on the air with callers. And if they can't call on the air, then of course we get comments, public comments. In fact, B just made a comment on a bill to make a mandatory 30-day comment period for any budget bill out of Congress more than $100 million. And so this is how we do things. So we are doing stuff. We don't just talk about things here. We don't just complain and then, you know, get a sponsor and then go home. We actually create legislation that anybody can copy the link and send it in and school board stuff. You know, if you wanted to write school board legislation, you know, we could certainly help with that. But if you're already on the school board, you can do it yourself. But if you wanted to do something through Action Radio, we have a website called writeyourlaws.com, WRITEYOURLAWS. And we're going to talk about more of that in our second hour here. But that's very, very cool stuff. Okay, Rachel, if you have a reaction to that, that's cool. Let me take that. And then the tough question. So I'm just going to give you a warning now.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. I need to look at that.
Okay. Yeah, please do. And comments, ideas. This is all about ideas. And this is a place where people can go. And I think it's perfect that B and I are doing this because we both are people with ideas. And we've both been told that our ideas are crazy. And we had to realize at some point that they may be a crazy person who said it, not for us. For us, they're perfectly normal. Okay, so here's the question. For a while, I've come to the idea that the government education system cannot be saved. That it is so bad, so indoctrinated, so union-controlled, so leftist-controlled, that no matter what you do, you know, as valiant as you would be on the school board, you're still going to have an entrenched majority of wackos, basically, that want to indoctrinate our kids with all this mush, stupid stuff. And I'm wondering if it's worth the fight, or should we just privatize the entire system? What do you think?
No, I feel like it's definitely worth the fight.
Okay.
The advantage, I guess, we have here in this small town is everybody knows everybody. I feel like we're a very close-knit town. I feel like we stand up for each other when we need standing up, you know, when the time comes. And so we've been very vocal about what we do and do not want in our schools here in this county.
Okay.
And for the most part, we've been heard. We have a wonderful superintendent now with us here, Ms. Michelle McClung, who has been nothing but an asset to our county. And she is conservative. She is on the same page that we all are. And at the same time, while keeping all that stuff, all that junk, as you call it, out of our system, she is also trying to move our county into the, you know, 21st century. So I can't say enough good things about her,
mm-hmm.
but I feel like we have the community that will stand up and say, this is not acceptable. We will not stand for this.
Okay.
Right.
Can you, do you have other people running, or are you still going to have a majority of older folks that don't have kids? I'd almost make a requirement that people have kids in the school system in order to run for school board, because at least you have a vested interest. But do you think you can get enough of a majority, or is it going to be you against the entrenched, you know, majority?
No, actually, I guess out of, let's see, six positions, there's actually only two that are going to be on the ballot.
Okay.
I mean, you don't have a lot of opposition. Now, the particular district that I'm in, District 4, we do have three people running,
mm-hmm.
all three Republicans, excuse me.
Okay.
That is something that people learn really quick here. Do not put yourself on a Democratic ticket. Because you do not have a chance. So.
Okay. That makes sense. I see the priorities of a government school versus, and I've had both. I had a private education in Australia. I had public education in Canada and the United States. Quite frankly, the private one was better. There was no contest. The amount of things that we could do in a private school so far exceeded what I was doing in public schools. I mean, I was 10 years old in Australia. We were taking field trips. We were doing, you know, taped interviews, cassette tapes, you know, when they were brand new. We were writing up reports for the whole day. I was 10 years old. You know, there's no way you could do that in school. Schools, most schools, they don't even take field trips. You know, they lock the kids up in classrooms. It's a terrible environment. Here's a question, too, for you. The money. Now, in Florida, it's probably not the same in Alabama, but just as an example, I think students here over the course of the year are going to get a combination of local, state, and federal, about $10,000 per student. Okay? So $10,000 per student, if you have a class of 30 kids, that's $300,000. Teacher salary, let's say the teacher salary is $50,000. I'm just pulling numbers out. These are going to be different. But that leaves $250,000 or $250,000 per classroom of money. If the school system is getting $10,000 per student, and you got 30 students in the classroom, less the teacher salary, that's $250,000. Where does all that money go? And why do we hear that the schools don't have enough money? If they're getting $250,000 per classroom in most schools that have 30 kids and a $10,000 per student amount of money per year.
Well, and actually that is something that's been brought up in this election because the members of our school board want to
mm-hmm.
Put money in a savings account or type, so to speak.
Okay.
And they're save, save, save. And this new superintendent that we have, she's not about saving. She's about spending. And that has caught her a lot of backlash, if you will. But the point that she's trying to make is, what good is it doing sitting in an account? So our teachers have received a pay raise, and our students have received are now receiving programs being put into place to help them. Our parents have programs being put into place to help them so that, you know, in the afternoon, you're not running around trying to get a teacher on the phone or another parent on the phone to find out what your child missed or what homework your child has because your child, you know, didn't write their homework down. She's trying to put programs into place where you can go online and see everything your child did that day, see what your child's homework is, mm-hmm. see where their progress is up to that day, not waiting for a report card to come out to say, oh, no, now we've got to do something. And again, she's received backlash for this, but, I mean, I stand behind her wholeheartedly. Why? What good is our money doing sitting in an account?
Well, unless you need it for a rainy day. I mean, that's why you have a savings account. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the money is a constant inflow from the state, so
mm-hmm.
you know, we're not going to run out.
No, but you can put it towards different programs. And I got one more question, then I want to bring B, and then we have another caller. Same area code, so I'm wondering if it's Stuart, the other person that B mentioned. Homeschoolers and art programs and sports programs after school and band and theater and things like that. If you have extra money, are you going to be accommodating homeschoolers and those different things that usually get cut, art, music, theater, and sports?
Yes, our school system has been very good. We now include homeschoolers in all extracurricular activities. They even have the program set up where homeschoolers can come in for two periods a day. Like my nieces and nephews are homeschooled, but
okay.
he's allowed to go to school to take like keyboarding or, you know, computer, things that they probably couldn't do at home.
Mm-hmm.
I have a friend who homeschools her children. Her son is very active in football, baseball, basketball. So they're doing much better in incorporating our homeschoolers into the extracurricular activities and even, you know, extra subjects that they have to come to the school to take, but they're very involved. They even involve them with senior year in taking photos and, you know, making sure they're in the yearbook and that sort of thing.
Interesting. Yeah, because one of the things we advocate here is a full voucher system so that, you know, people can make the decision as to where they're going to spend their money. Let me bring another caller here. It's another 251 area code. And so apparently we're going to have a lot of callers today. This is kind of cool. So, and all new folks to Action Radio. So our new caller, welcome to Action Radio. First name and where are you calling from, please?
Can you hear
That's
me?
You. Yeah, I can now. You're live on the air to most of the world. So, yeah, feel free. I'm Greg. This is Action Radio. First name?
Scotty Stewart.
Hey, Scotty. How you doing? Welcome to Action Radio. And let's get you right in the conversation. Here's someone that B told me would be calling, so that's good. And if you want to – we build callers throughout the show, so nobody has to leave. So we'll just kind of add people, and as we do this, the discussion will get more interesting. Well, let's hear your story, and maybe we can help you with Action Radio.
Okay.
Good morning, Scott.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing fine, honey. How are you?
I'm doing good.
Okay. Let it rip.
Well, I met Miss B yesterday, and I had heard, you know, she had showed up in town a few days prior to that and just had a little amazing story. And so when I met her yesterday, we got to talking, and she found out that, you know, I'm the county commissioner here in Escambia County, Alabama, not Escambia County, Florida, but Escambia County, Alabama in District 3.
Mm-hmm.
And I am running for re-election. This was my first term. So I was, she just asked me to call in this morning. I'm running for re-election. I have two more, just like Ms. Rachel, I have two more running against me. So there's three. Next Tuesday that'll be in there. And the race is just, you know, it's pretty tight. It was a bad upset when I won. You know, the last time the guy beat, he had been in for 24 years, and he was on the Democrat ticket. And he
Yeah, they do stick around for a while, don't they? They feel like it's a job entitlement. You know, it's like my political job is my job entitlement. Yeah, so I understand that.
Yeah. Yeah, he had been 24 years, and, you know, it was my first term, and then a couple years into the term, he changed parties to the Republican ticket. Now he's running against me on the same ticket. So,
well, that's convenient.
That's, you know, it, everything switched after 18 or right around, you know, between 16 and 18, and if you was on the other ticket, you didn't make it, so. But I qualified and run. I've always been a conservative, Christian patriot veteran. So I've always, stood for that side anyway.
Wow. Sounds like you need a round of applause, too.
Yeah.
I'm having fun. Let's bring B back in the conversation here. Do you have questions for either Rachel or Scotty? I tend to monopolize. So don't be shy, B, about just leaping in and saying, I got a question. I want to make a comment. So just feel free. You're among friends.
No, I am so happy that God led me to these two individuals, Blumden is a little small town, but isn't this unusual that I met Rachel? I tell you that I went to a beauty shop there and was handing out the flyers. And so she told me to come in, and I came in, and she was so sweet. And it was a beauty shop. I didn't know it. And it was so beautiful inside when I came in, and I was picking up flyers. And so when I was giving out mine, and I was picking up, and I wanted to know who was running in those positions. And I picked up Rachel, and I said, I need to talk to her. I picked her flyer up, her little card. I need to talk to this young lady. And she wrote the number on the back of it. And it was just strange how that happened, because I had came inside. It was late. It was dark when I got home because I don't drive at night. But I got home, and I went back out to my car, and I said, I got to get that card. Something about this person, this individual person, that I need to talk to. So I talked to her. I called her. And she never seen me before. And I called her, like I'm saying, like how me and you are unique people. That's mm-hmm. how unique this was. And when I called her and I talked to her and she cried.
Oh.
Well, and I assured her that everything was going to be all right.
Yeah,
Rachel, for calling in.
I just had a little housekeeping thing to do. We had a little bit of an echo either on Scotty or Rachel's line. So you want to mute your phone. Just hit the mute button when you're not talking because I think sometimes we're getting a little bit of feedback. I want to make sure we get the best signal for everybody here. So I'm just going to bring Rachel and Scotty back in. Rachel, did you have a comment on what B said?
Well, it had been a rough day. My husband and I are foster parents, and we have been for 8 years.
Wow.
And we're in a fight now for our youngest through the foster system, and it had been a rough day. We were in court for 8 to 9 hours that day, was testifying, was hearing testimony, and I had gotten home and kind of decompressed, so to speak, and my phone rang, and it was Mama B, and I had not seen her in person, but I had seen her photo. She had left her photograph in my, like I said, in the ice cream shop. And mm-hmm. so I knew who she was when she called me. And she told me how she came across my number and the beauty shop that she was in. The lady that owns that beauty shop is a dear, dear, lifelong friend of mine and had some part in my raising. And it melted my heart. I did begin to cry. It's been a long day. And she was just the most encouraging, sweetest soul that I needed to hear at that point. And I do believe that God sent her to me that day. And I am eternally grateful.
Wow. Let me bring Scotty back in here. I have a question on the county commission. What's the biggest problem in your county right now? What do you want to solve?
Well, we have two really, really big issues that, of course, money would solve at all. But the our county jail is way over capacity. It was built in 91 or 92 mm-hmm. for about 130 inmates, something like that. And over the last 3 to 4 years, we've been, 300 plus inmates in this jail. And
well, how big's the town? How big's the county? I'm just curious how many people you have.
40, around between 30 and 40,000, something like that. It's
and 300 are in jail. See, I don't know. Just,
oh, yeah.
I don't know what the,
yeah.
Wow.
There,
okay. What are you doing there?
Well, just to be honest with you, the opioid, you know, the drug problem, meth problem, all that is really bad. Yeah, because, I mean, it's, we have, you know, three major, I reckon you'd say, hubs. You got Brewton, Alabama, Atmore, Alabama, and Flemington. And then, you know, the rest of the county is all rural. And we got about 990 square miles of county. So, it's, you know, it's pretty rural, pretty long. So, the big thing is we have a lot of people that come from surrounding counties, too, that just, you know, get caught doing stuff they shouldn't be doing. But our jail and our courthouse is two big issues. We managed to purchase some land, but since COVID started, our projected cost on the jail went from $30 million to $60 million, you know, just in a matter of 2 years.
Wow.
So everything's kind of went on, put on hold. And
yeah.
So that's the one issue that we hadn't, you know, been able to solve.
Let me just hold you for a second on this, because this is important, and we're a national show. We got a lot of folks here, so I want to kind of, you know, people are wondering why we're talking about these very local issues in this town of Flemington, Alabama. It's because their problems are your problems, and a lot of the more I do this, the more I find how similar problems are. So let's expand this out a little bit. We've got a wide open southern border. Okay, we have an illegal administration in the White House that is purposely bringing in millions of people to screw up our country, to have them vote illegally and do all kinds of other things. At the county level, that's huge. So I'm wondering with the jail, it really sounds like more of a drug problem. And so I want to talk about that too, because this is a federal problem that's being put on you. It's like an unfunded mandate. And this is something every county in the country has to deal with. The other thing every country in the county has to deal with is illegal aliens. You know, Escambia County, Florida has a problem with illegal aliens. Santa Rosa County, where I am, it's not so bad. But there are ways to do this. And once again, the federal government not only is not going to do anything about it, they're going to import them and fly them or bus them into your county. So you got two huge problems. You got drugs coming in, and you got people coming in, neither which you want, neither which anybody wants. Okay, so you got to get creative. And so I'm going to get B's opinion on this too. But you got to get creative. As far as the jail, have you looked into alternative sentences? Have you thought of restitution, work kind of programs, or anything for especially nonviolent offenders? Are there alternatives to jail that might save you $30 million and still have these people do community service, do work, do all kinds of things that would help them out, you know, go to drug treatment programs, learn about different things that would get them off the drugs and into a place where they could actually you know, be much more productive. And again, this is for every county in the country, and around the world this problem is going to be going on. And we've got drug problems in all kinds of different places. But right now, do you think that we'll talk about alternative sentences, then I'll give you my idea for illegal aliens. So are there other ways to handle this besides building a big jail? What do you think?
Well, I mean, just about everything you just mentioned we already have in place.
Okay, good.
You know, we have work release. We have you know, community corrections, we have drug courts, we have all that, you know, to keep the people out of jail so that they're, you know, still trying to work, be productive citizens. The ones that, you know, we do have work release. You know, our sheriff has, you know, implemented that, and it's, you know, it really helps the county out, being a rural county, you know, with these extra people out working, cutting grass, picking up trash, you know, patching potholes, that kind of stuff. The only thing, and this is nationwide, that our county, it really, really hurts, and this leads into the drug problem, is the mental health. The government has cut mental health funding to the state level, and then the state cut it to the county levels, and, you know, they closed all, you know, the mental health facilities. There's no, if you call for a mental health person, you may get one, you know, somebody on call that answer the phone. They may show up in 8 hours or they may not show up. And there's just, you know, it's not the right thing to do if somebody has mental health problems or, you know, they're having issues and stuff like that, to throw them in jail. But that's the only issue. That's the only answer here, is because there's no funding for that. You know, one of the, you know, big things several years back when they cut all that is, you know, what do we do with these people? And they just turn them loose. Well, these people are a big issue too, you know, and they deserve.
Oh, I've seen the cities.
Yes.
A lot of homeless people with mental issues, with mental health issues. Yeah. Okay. We have about 45 minutes left. We're going to start moving a little bit faster through issues because I want to cover more things. Bring B back in the conversation here. B, what's your reaction to that? And then we'll talk illegal aliens. And then I have another caller. It's going to get busy.
Yeah, I can. I understand how high this takes a toll on every city. And, you know, Alabama got 67 cities like Florida does. And it got to get that connection. And first of all, we got to change some laws. That's number one thing. We definitely got to write some new laws and to bring it in accountability.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you really look at that, once they let them out, what is the opportunity for them to stay off of what they are? Once you let them out, here is a new person coming in doing the same thing, and once they get to hanging there, they back on it. You see what I'm saying? A lot of them are repeat offenders. A lot of them have tried to get off of stuff like that, and a lot of them could not, and you got them coming right back in. And like he was talking about the mental illness thing, yes, that's a big problem. It really is. And I understand what Mr. Scotty is saying, and I'm with him, and, you know, we all got to pull together. We sister of Pensacola and Florida. We sisters. That's across the hill is what you say, right across the fence. And I love working with Alabama also, but I'm a Floridian, and they on the line of Florida. So when I cross over that, I cross over there because a lot of them work in Pensacola, you know, and a lot of people work in Flemington. So when I cross over that, I always try my best to go and visit wherever God leads me to visit other people, elderly people, nursing homes, and things like that, from anybody. But I'm thankful that I have that unique gift to get a chance to meet Rachel, get a chance to meet Mr. Scotty, get a chance to know that they want to help their community and to do better, especially for the children. God says, suffer little children to come unto me. And he don't want that. The children are the most priceless thing in America, in the world. And as you see what's happening now at the border, so as you see what is going on, but we can make a difference. We got to write some laws that's going to stick.
Well, it's funny you should say that. I just happen to have one I want to present. So, Scotty, just to give you the quick version of what we do here, we have our own citizen legislature, and we have a legislature at writeyourlaws.com. That's WriteYourLaws, writeyourlaws.com. If you're looking for ideas, you know, that's a place you might find it. And for both Rachel and Scotty, and then I'll get to our new caller in just a minute here, the big problem with illegal aliens coming in at the border is they take up places in school for our school kids. They take up places in jail. They commit crimes. And, you know, I have a report on the Illegal Alien Crime Report. It's a website you might want to check out. We're having millions of people being brought to our country who have no right to be here. And so what I came up with was a way for states and counties and cities, you know, state and local government to deal with this. And the way you do it is civil asset forfeiture. And so I'm going to go B, Rachel, and Scotty kind of go through this and see what you think of this idea. So the feds will tell you that they control immigration, which is not entirely true. They control the border. Well, it is. but, you know, and they anything to do with immigration has to go through the federal government. Well, that's just simply not true. It's nationalization and it's citizenship, basically. And I forgot what is it, the national immigration, whatever the act is. Anyway, the point being that if you want to not have trouble with the feds, you use a local law enforcement procedure, civil asset forfeiture. So if you have illegal aliens in your jurisdiction, county, city, whatever, you take their stuff and say, look, you know, as a criminal being in the country illegally, we're going to seize your house and your car. Okay. So what you want to do is you want to make it impossible for people to live here. Once the word gets out, people are not going to stay in a place where they're going to lose their stuff, okay, because they're coming here for benefits. And then if maybe there's a way to charge, you know, back benefits, you know, on the way out the door. But the thing is, you do this, and this can be done locally. You know, you can seize a crack house. You can seize a meth house. You can seize, you know, drug dealers' cars, boats, airplanes. You know, states can, I think, can take bank accounts. But this is a way that, because it's local and state, it doesn't involve the feds. And once the word gets out, people are going to leave your county, they're going to leave the next county, and they're going to end up in the sanctuary cities, which is the exact opposite of what we call illegal alien free zones. Same thing with the schools. Now, we're not going after the kids. We're going after their parents. Okay, I don't blame kids who are brought by their parents illegally into this country. It's not the kids' fault. However, once they stay as adults, it is their fault. So all these DACA people that are here, you know, if they came as kids, okay, I understand that. But if you stayed as an adult and you didn't go home and you didn't fix the situation, you're just as guilty as someone that came here illegally and actually crossed the border. So that's our bill. It's called the Illegal Alien Free Zone Bill. I wrote it for Santa Rosa County. But it would apply, and again, here's the catch, though. This is what makes it, I think, one of the best things. The money that law enforcement gets from seizing these properties when they sell them, that money gets redistributed back to the taxpayers. Okay, so nobody's making money off this. All right, this is not a scheme for you know, everybody to go after everybody and take their stuff and then get a big budget for whatever. No, the money gets turned back to the taxpayers who are being burdened right now by illegal aliens. So we're taking the profit out, and the companies that hire illegal aliens, they lose their companies, okay? The NGOs, Catholic charities, Lutheran charities, Baptist charities that are financing and bringing all these illegals here and making it possible, you know, that from that bus ride, from that airplane ride, from across the border, they lose their buildings and facilities too, okay? So you seize the assets of the people that are bringing illegal aliens in, they're not going to come in. And we haven't rounded up a single person. They've done it themselves. They've left. B, what do you think?
Thank you. I think that's excellent. That does it. That's hit the nail on the head. And we got to...
Well, thank you. Rachel?
Because another aspect of that...
Oh, B, did you have more? I'm sorry, do you have more? I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, we fine. Go ahead, Rachel.
Okay, Rachel?
Another aspect of that, which creates the trickle-down effect, of course, is, again, we've been foster parents for 8 years,
mm-hmm.
and we're busting at the seams. Our foster care system, of course, is broken, has been for years. That's nothing new. But mm-hmm. when you bring in these children, many who don't even come across with their parents, and they're asking foster families to take them in, well, we can't mm-hmm. even support our own children who are in foster care.
We don't even have
enough families to take in the children who are U.S. citizens. Mm-hmm. So how in the world are we going to take in all these illegal aliens, these children who are coming across with no parents?
Why would you want to? They're being brought here specifically to serve as anchors for the rest of the family. That's illegal. By the way, birthright citizenship, someone who's born in this country, who's parents of illegal aliens, they are not citizens. That is a misnomer. It is a policy. It is not a law passed by Congress, and it certainly isn't in the Constitution. 14th Amendment actually prevents people from getting citizenship born here on our soil to illegal alien parents. We can talk about that sometime too. Let me get Scotty in the conversation. What do you think? Civil asset forfeiture, is that something you can use at the county level?
Well, it sounds, you know, a wonderful idea. I have one question you can answer pretty quick. How does the forfeiture trickle down back to the public? How would you do that in the form of programs, or, I mean, how would you do that?
No, it's a reimbursement. The government's not going to use this as a slush fund. No, whatever money is coming in from the sale of houses, cars, seizures of bank accounts, things like that, whatever the counties and the states can do, that money gets redistributed, you know, to the taxpayers.
That was my question, is how would you give it to the taxpayers? I mean, would you just cut a check to everybody
refund.
In the county?
Just put in their annual refund.
Oh, and the taxes. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, right in the taxes, stuff. Yeah, you don't want to make it a slush fund. the corruption. Go ahead. That's a good question.
It sounds wonderful because, and I told Miss B this when we was talking yesterday. Mm-hmm. When I got back from Desert Storm, I went into law enforcement. Well, I hired in before I went to Desert Storm, but when I come back, I went into law enforcement. And
mm-hmm.
there was an act on the books then that we used up until it changed here not too long ago, but the Drug Enforcement Act of 1985, I believe Ronald Reagan had passed it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something this county, and when you're talking about seizing stuff now, we don't have the big influence here because it's these little departments, the sheriff's departments, these departments, and they'll take you. I mean, they do it. Now, if you get caught with drugs or you're doing something wrong, we're going to take your stuff. That's just the way it is because you shouldn't be doing it. And then
but
the only thing is
it.
On that act, Yeah, the money don't go back to the people. It goes back into the law enforcement to fight drugs again.
See,
but
That's the corruption. See, the problem was you were taking money, not you specifically, but law enforcement was taking money and property and things from people before conviction. You can't get to American citizens. We have constitutional rights. See, illegal aliens have
no constitutional rights because they can't be here.
But you see where but that's where the abuse was. And this is why those laws were changed, because law enforcement agencies had an incentive to seize things, and then you had to prove you weren't guilty. Okay, well, you don't have to do that. You have to, you know, it's up to government to prove that people are guilty and get a conviction, and then you take the stuff. But see, illegal
aliens.
Right.
It was always after conviction. I mean, that was.
Okay, but it wasn't around the country. There were a lot of places that would just take stuff.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah, I mean, I've seen it on the news. I understand. Yes, sir.
Yeah, exactly. So, but don't forget, it's different for American citizens versus illegal aliens. First of all, citizenship is not private. Citizenship is not private. It's a public declaration of who you are. So law enforcement, in fact, I would put, we got another bill, B, you're going to love this one, to put your citizenship on your driver's license. That way every law enforcement officer knows your citizenship status, just like the folks at the border know when you present a passport. They know your citizenship, okay? It's not private information. So why isn't it on our driver's licenses? And if someone is illegal, then they shouldn't be getting a driver's license. That's another story. Let's bring on another caller here. This is getting fun. I'm getting excited. We only have half an hour left. 321 area code. Welcome to Action Radio. First name, please.
This is Colonel Calvin Wimbish.
Okay, we got last name, too.
County
Colonel.
Florida.
Welcome to the show.
Hey.
Welcome to Action Radio.
I am just fired up listening to the conversation from across the border between Alabama and Florida, and we're all on the same page, especially Mama B. How are you this morning, Mama B?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I am blessed and highly favored by the Lord who called me to come out of retirement after serving so many years in the military. I thought I was done serving, but you all have been talking about the reasons why I decided to step up to the plate again and to step in and be the kind of servant leader that we need, a Christ-like man who knows that tyranny is here. And when I swore to protect our nation against all enemies, both foreign and domestic, you guys were just talking so much about the domestic enemies that are upon us right now who are really taking our nation and taking it in the wrong direction so much that I have to look out for this generation and the next generation and the next by being an advocate. And also, I like to say I'm going to be Cal the Baptist in Congress, because when I get to the U.S. Congress, I'm not going to take any prisoners. I'm just going to take them all out, especially the squad. I want to make sure that we turn our country back to God.
This is why I love military folks, because you're the only people that swear an oath to the Constitution and mean it, okay, and carry it through the rest of your life. You know, this is great. I feel like I'm shortchanging B, so I want to give her a chance to talk to you quickly, and then I've got a million questions. First one being, you know, how do you suffer, you know, an illegal administration sitting in the White House? Well, I'll save that one for a minute. B, do you want to talk to Colonel Allen?
Yes, Colonel Wimbush.
Colonel Wimbush, I'm sorry, sir.
He's going to be in South Dakota. He's already here now. He came in this morning at 3 a.m. And so he's going to be at the Wahoo Stadium also. And so Kevin can tell you, Colonel can tell you how we met. And I came across him. Okay, so... It looked like to me what's going on, Greg, I done picked up enough fish now so to make the shark come alive, okay? So
It's
really based on what all we are talking about, everything that you're talking about, the laws and regulations that you're putting in place, what the commissioners is talking about, what the schools is talking about, everything that's centered around America. And he is one that will make a difference in the District 10. So he's here. So I'm so happy he's here. So give him a chance, if we could, give him a chance to speak what he's really going to do when he get in that office. I know God sent this man for me to share with everybody on Radio Land.
Well, I'm just glad to make all these new friends. So, B, thank you. And, Colonel, I apologize. I was typing and talking at the same time, and I messed things up. So, Colonel, let's hear your platform, and then Patty's on the line, so we'll get to her next as well. So, Colonel,
you're
running for Congress?
First of all,
I'm
running for the U.S. Congress District, and where Val Demings was in, and I say I'm Cal opposite of Val. We're tired of taking our country through hell. And when people step up and try to take and turn the truth into a lie, it really bothers me, and a lot of people don't realize that there was a great spokesperson that I admire and try to emulate, and he once said, a lie doesn't become truth, wrong doesn't become right, and evil doesn't become good just because it's accepted by the masses. That was Booker T. Washington.
Wow.
A slave who rose above his circumstances, established right across the line there in Alabama, Tuskegee, and he saw the vision, just like the one before him, Frederick Douglass, which I believe I'm in the spirit of Frederick Douglass, who was able to arouse the nation when the House and the Congress, the Senate, and even the Supreme Court in a 7-2 decision decided slavery was going to stay in vogue, not on his watch. And he was able to walk right into the President Lincoln, one of the greatest presidents in history, to make sure that the bonds of slavery was ended immediately. And he got thousands of coloreds to join the Union Army. It's just not a movie. Well, Denzel Washington, who's once a personal idol, plays a role in it. But it's the whole point of where we are today. And so I'm taking that attitude, and I call it my altitude of attitude and attitude of gratitude, to step up to the plate. And I look at the three top things that are bothering me a lot is our economy, energy independence, and education. I call it the trifecta or triple E. And if we can solve these problems by doing many of the things that I was listening to you all discussing this morning, regardless of what state, we're lucky to be in the free state of Florida. I think we can get things back on track and return America to its moral compass of putting God back in it first, as our founders had intended. And that being a man of color, it didn't matter what color we are. We're all created in God's image. All of that is in me now to step up and say, Calvin, what can you do? And when I get called by the Lord in the middle of the night, realizing that I was willing to go into harm's way, I'm a Bronze Star recipient. I served in Iraq, Afghanistan. I've been in South Korea, flew on the DMZ as a helicopter pilot, military intelligence, and I could go on forever, but we'll end it at that. But God has blessed me with exposure and experience, both in leadership, in corporate America, and as a teacher in high school. And yet the woke society was so entrenched that they wouldn't even let me teach any longer 2 years ago or before COVID. And I've been saying, well, what am I supposed to do next other than work out and help my wife in the garden? But when this event occurred in Afghanistan, I saw those kids get killed. It was too much. And I know every veteran who's in the sound of my voice understands what that's all about. We're willing to go into harm's way to take on people who are suppressing people. We want to liberate the oppressed. I'm a Green Beret, so I wanted to take all that I've been trained to do and apply it to saving my nation. So with that, I wanted to just, you know, I could you go ask people to go to my website, VOTECAL2022.org. And it'll expand on my vision, my hope, but more or less my honor and hope that I can be the kind of person that those who elect me to office can depend on. I'm a man of integrity. I do what I say, and I say what I do. And then no one's going to cause me to get bought out, because those people who believe that they can rise above their circumstances, I will be your servant leader.
Oh, yeah, you got an hour on the show, just you. I mean, we're going to talk. That's amazing. I haven't heard a resume like that. And nothing against Rachel and Scotty. You guys, I want to get you back, too. But that's incredible. We have so much to talk about. It's got to go that fighting for our freedom, fighting for freedom of other people around the world, only to have our own government stolen by a coup. And we're pretty direct here on the show, and I don't mess around with stuff. So feel free to be blunt. But as someone, you know, as a Bronze Star decorated military veteran, you've got to be screaming at what's going on right now, especially the surrender in Afghanistan. And I'm not trying to stir up bad memories or problems or things like that, but feel free to sort of, you know, what would you change in Congress about that? You know, what can we do? Or just, let's just talk about the whole fact that we surrendered. We don't surrender. We're Americans. We don't surrender.
Yeah.
And yet, here we are, sir.
Yeah. We would start with the top and get rid of the so-called leaders, because they're really misguided leaders who have, in the military term, misconduct, unbecoming of someone who's been given the honor and the opportunity to make decisions that are faithful to the rules, the Constitution, that were set in place so that we, the people, don't have to suffer at the hands of those who are greedy, and all it is about is power. And it just really grips me as I've gone through life, both in the military as well as in corporate America. Some people get into positions of power, and it goes to their head. They forget where they came from, and they burn bridges, and then they don't want to admit it. So next thing you know, continuing in their efforts to expand the ugliness that is causing this divide in our country. When you look at what's happening in education, for example, the CRT, that that really got my attention when I was a teacher for 5 years, teaching JROTC in high school at two different schools. But the wokeness was already being embedded. I had discussions and challenges about history, and I love history. And like I said, I'm in the spirit of Frederick Douglass, and he grew up there in Chesapeake Bay, and I grew up originally in Baltimore, Maryland, and I had the honor of having Mama B talk to my mom, who's 94, and those two just sounded like two girls who know what the heck is going on, because they walk by faith, not by sight. And I apply that in everything that I try to do in raising my own kids and also instructing those children who were in the classroom. But honor, respect, selfless service, and integrity was missing. And I couldn't understand why it wasn't being pushed by the administrations of the schools. And now you got the school boards who call parents domestic terrorists. Come on, give me a break. The terrorists that we're hurting are the ones like you see on the news every day are killing our people around our nation. I was just found out this morning in my home city of Orlando was another shooting. And we had the horrific shooting up there in New York, and you had it in Chicago. We could go on and on. What is going on? Pandora's box with not closing our borders. And now all the terrorists who could be really set up in cells, they're here. 9/11, you ain't seen nothing yet. And I know every veteran is probably shouting the same thing right now who is listening. They are in place, and it's going to just take a simple phone call, and they're going to be told, execute. And they are executing terrorism right now. Even our Supreme Court justices can't even have peace. Separation of the different parts of our government, the executive and the judicial. You know, come on. And yet they allow the demonstrations to occur. They can't go out, literally out on the street. I mean, the yelling and screaming about, well, what we like to have versus what our Constitution said we should have. And where does life begin? I'm thankful of God and my mom that life began at the moment that heartbeat started. So my mom said and my dad said, when they die, they want to know that when they get to heaven, it wasn't because somebody pulled the plug on them. Because if someone did, when they try to get to heaven, they're going to do their best to push them back down the other way. And we have to change our leadership in Congress. Nancy's got to go. Chuck Schumer's
well,
got
I
to
mean,
go.
The direct way is to have the states that are battleground states disqualify their Brandon electors and have Trump electors. I mean, the actual vote count. The real one is 316 Trump to 222 Brandon. I mean, that's the actual vote count.
Yes.
If you take the Trump electors as voted by the state legislature. I don't know if you're in contact. We've got a friend of the show, Jerome Bell. He's 27-year Navy chief petty officer. He's running for Congress in Virginia, and he's running on some of our citizen legislation. So I'm going to two bills I'm going to tell you about in just a little bit, but I want to get Patty on the show before we run out of show. And we will talk about the awakening before we end. Then I'll put it in the show notes if people want to find out that they don't have to listen through all 2 hours, although they certainly should. But we're going to talk about that for like maybe the last 10 minutes. We'll bring that up and make sure that gets there, and I'll put that in the notes so people know where to find it. So Patty, this is all your fault. Welcome to the show.
All right. I turned the mute button off, and thank you for giving me credit for that, Greg.
Let's give her a cheer, too.
Yeah, give her a cheer.
Okay, Patty, what's your story?
Well, my story is I feel like we're barely hanging on by our fingernails.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm doing everything I can think of to hold on. And I'm so grateful to Cal for stepping up and running. And I'm so grateful to B for partnering with me and for all the many years that she has spent registering Republican voters and opening the eyes of the public to understand what's really going on. Because as you know, Greg, what is it, maybe 99.5% of the media lies continuously.
Mm-hmm. Not
so
on this show.
Getting out to the people, well, that's why I'm, you know, you're included in that one half of 1%. But getting the truth out to the people is a daunting task.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I wake up every day trying to do that.
I have a solution for you. In fact, let me check in with B real quick too. B, do you want to jump in here, and then I have my solution for both Patty and Cal. B.
Yeah.
We don't have to have a comment. I just like to give you the option. you're my invited guest. Everybody else just kind of tagged along. This is funny. I'm having a good time this morning. All right.
I would like to just mention that you sound so much in your resolve and your strength and courage to be truthful and honest and not be a man who's going to waver. Like a gentleman that I've been on his broadcast several times, his name is Chris Hart, American Adversary on FM 950. And I tell you, with you two, if we can get more like you across every city, every county, every state, across this nation, we can change in a positive way the mindset of those who have been duped by the in-trade and corrupt fake media. We know that exists. Everyone always thought about the top five broadcast networks. But when you have a two or three, you know, like the Fox and the OAN and the Newsmax, all of a sudden they want to silence them. A few weeks ago, OAN was eliminated off of the AT&T DirecTV. Why?
I know. I have to pick them up on my computer now. Yeah.
Wow.
So it's a shame that these types of things continue. You know, it's glad that people like Elon Musk is proposed to buy Twitter, so we don't have to be shut down. But I'm glad Truth is up by President Trump and Pollard is back. And there's a lot of ways. TFN, there's a group which I'm sure B and Patty are aware of, the Slaughter Republican Assembly. Great organization all over the nation, and they are really doing the call to action. And people just need to come out of the eggshell.
Let's break some eggs. So first of all, thank you very much for that. I really appreciate it. Secondly, it's always been my plan to train action radio hosts around the country. So any talk show host that wants to actually do something instead of just talking and selling, you know, used cars, nothing wrong with that actually, but talk to us here at Action Radio and I will show you how this works. I'll show you how that your audience can put bills on writeyourlaws.com, how they can copy those bill links and send them to every legislator and every media person, every talk person they want to. And this is how we change things. So as far as this goes, this is a bill I wanted to talk to B about anyway. We have a bill that changes Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act. I think it's Title 42. And it's very simple. It's very simple. It makes the liability conditional. And you can support this bill. You can endorse this bill. In fact, B, I forgot to mention this too. B, any of the bills that you want to endorse, just let me know. I'm starting endorsement lists at the bottom. And that goes for Rachel, Scotty, Calvin, Patty. Any of you folks say, I endorse this bill. I support this bill. You know, I'm going to start a list of endorsements. Not everybody, but you know, otherwise we have too long a list. We'll go in the comments. But, you know, like we have Dr. Zelenko and Dr. Mikovits endorsing our bill for full product liability on vaccine makers. I'll talk about that one in a minute, too. Section 230, very simply, says that if a big tech social media or search engine company touches anything that anybody posts on social media, they lose their liability immunity. If they touch anybody's account on social media, they lose their liability immunity. If they arrange the search engine results in any way other than the raw number of hits, if they manipulate them in any way, they lose their liability immunity. It costs nothing. You didn't have to buy Twitter. This solution, if it had gone through Congress, especially when Trump was as president, would have cost only the enforcement power of the courts to bring liability lawsuits against big tech, social media, and search engines simply for violating the people's postings, the people's accounts, and the search engines. And if people say, well, wait a minute, what about all that stuff on there that's obscene and pornographic and whatever? We've got laws for that. We've got a Justice Department. We've got state police. We've got state courts. We've got federal courts. We've got local jurisdictions, local law enforcement. We already have the obscenity pornography laws in place. You don't give that power to big tech. You don't have to make something illegal twice. Colonel, what do you think?
Absolutely. You're spot on. I'm ready to sign the bill. If I was in office right now, mm-hmm. I would say, Congressman, I would be pushing it so hard that I would be
running across
the Capitol.
Yeah, run
well.
On it. Put in your platform. Put on your website. Let's go.
Hey, I'll take everything that you said and then some.
You guys. Hey, Greg, I have a question.
Sure.
On the Section 230, is there no accountability when these social media platforms fail to just be a platform when they choose sides? Isn't there something in that bill in that law that no accountability?
None. Why? Because it's the Good Samaritan Clause. It's done by good faith. Okay? So, key words are, I'm just doing this from memory, but the key words are otherwise objectionable. Let me give you the list of this. Let's bring up the, and then Pianki's on the line. Pianki, you waited too long. You should have called earlier. We only have 15 minutes left. But we'll do this. Well, I'm going to do this every Monday. This is too much fun. All right. So let me see. Vaccine manufacturer. All right, Section 230. Okay. So I'll pull up that bill right now. And I got like six of them on my list. We have about 80 bills on file, and I have about 160 more to write. Okay, so here's the laws of current
wonderful.
Ones. Oh, yeah, I got enough work for several years. We're going to be busy. All right, so the current law says, Title 47, Section 230, says C, protection for Good Samaritan blocking and screening of offensive material. Part 2 says civil liability, says no provider or user of an interactive computer service shall be held liable on account of any action voluntarily taken in good faith, whatever that means, to restrict access to or availability of material that the provider or user, what's basically the provider, considers to be obscene, lewd, lascivious, filthy, excessively violent, harassing, or, and here's the key words, otherwise objectionable. That allows them to do anything they damn well please.
Yeah, so basically it does nothing.
Mm-hmm. No, it gives them permission to do anything they want as long as it's done in good faith. Well, what company is going to say they aren't acting in good faith? Now, here's my bill, Part A. No provider of interactive computer services shall be liable for any action, interaction, or anything post. All right. In other words, they're not liable for what you do. It's like the phone company isn't liable for what you say over phone lines or over your cell phone. Here's the key, Part B. Any infringement, interaction, or interference, no matter how minuscule, with the actions, interactions, postings, or content on social media, or of any touching of the arrangement of results on a search engine beyond the actual number of hits only of or for any user of interactive computer services by any provider of interactive computer services, shall void and revoke civil liability protection from that provider. That's it.
Beautiful.
That's it. That's the solution.
Like
it's that simple. You know, four lines of law.
That's 100%.
Okay, good. Well, just send me an email or send me a Facebook message so that I put your name on the endorsement list. Let's get Pianki on the line. Pianki, welcome. Pianki's one of our Pianki's like my co-host. Pianki, welcome to our gathering with Mama B, Rachel, Scotty, Colonel Calvin, and Patty. Pianki?
Well, good morning to everyone. I was listening to your conversation with Mama B, and I couldn't say anything. It sounds so well presented, and she brings so much experience to the table. So what could I add to it? But
I thought you get in with the banana split. The fact that we got past food and you didn't call in, that really shocked me. Tell you about Rachel's ice cream shop. That I'm considering what you do with Alan Dawson calling from Belize, you know, with all his things down there. Okay, we've got about 10 minutes left. I want to make sure we do this. So B, please tell us about the awakening and what's going on tonight. And if anybody has questions on that, then we can cover that. B?
Okay. The awakening is that this filmmaker who and cast members, it's a documentary film, and what it is about is the black conservatives speaking out against all of this, defunding the police and riots and all of this is involved with the point of view on it. And our main people that is in there is Alveda King, and Colonel West and Lisa Babbitt. And so they're talking, letting us be aware, and I'm in that also, letting us be aware that of what is going on in black anybody's eyes need to wake up. So it's called awakening. And it's called From Systematic Deception. And it will be, we're hoping people will come out, get their tickets. It's to be tonight. And the doors open up at 6:30 at the Wahoo Stadium, Blue Wahoo Stadium in Pensacola, Florida.
Yeah, it's showing other places, too, if you want to give a couple of other cities. And then we have about 9 minutes left. We can kind of get a little free-for-all here. We actually have one more bill to talk about. B, I think it was in Atlanta and other places it's played. Folks around the country want to check
it
out.
Well, it played, yeah, we had played it in Atlanta, Georgia, outskirts of Atlanta, Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
And Lisa Babbitt will be here, the one that did it in Georgia. She will be here. I think they are already here, probably already here. And our special guest is Colonel Hal Winrich. So we are happy to have him, and we're going to have some fun, okay? Children getting together, and we're going to have some fun. And my lovely Patty, Lord Jesus, thank you. So that's what pushed me into this, okay? Patty, she's the cause of all of this.
Yeah, see, Patty, look what you've done. You brought us all together. Look at this party we're having on Monday.
You give me way too much credit, Dee. Way too much credit.
Hey, look, we're one big happy family. We're one big happy family now. So, yeah. Yes, Patty.
Bee and I connected several months ago, and we just got closer and closer and closer and closer. And she was keeping me up to date on this work she was doing on the documentary.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as you know, I stay pretty busy, but my husband and I finally sat down and watched it. And as I was watching it, I'm thinking, oh, boy, this needs to be seen far and wide.
Mm-hmm.
So I talked to Bee. I said, what do you think about putting on an event where we show the documentary? Of course, she thought that was a great idea. And then I was in Orlando for a Republican Party of Florida quarterly meeting. And I spoke to the folks down there, including our chairman and vice chairman, which our vice chairman is in Pensacola. He will be speaking at our Gulf Coast Patriots meeting tonight at 5 at Lillo's Tuscan Grill, 51 Gulf Breeze Parkway. And he will also be attending the awakening tonight. I also talked to the grassroots director for the Ron DeSantis campaign, as well as our executive director, and floated the idea about showing the documentary. They were all in agreement. In fact, when I mentioned it in one of the committee meetings we had, everybody was asking me, how do I get a link to this film? So Bee and I are really hoping that this event will springboard into having events all around the state, if not the nation, that we help people to understand what's really going on. And I wanted to mention also the link to, if you want to get your tickets in advance, which I recommend. I'm a little bit concerned. We only have two box office windows open tonight. We will have a table for those that have cash on them and tickets that way. But you can go to BIT, that's B, I as in Ida, T as in Tom, dot, L as in Larry, Y as in yes, /systematic deception. If you type that in, you'll go directly to the ticket link at Wahoo Stadium. The tickets are $5 a piece. We intentionally put them very low because we don't want the cost of the admission to be a deterrent for people to come. So this is not about making money. This is about getting people informed. If you buy online, there is a service fee of $1.50. So if you get them at the box office, $5. If you get them online, $6.50 total.
Yeah, I'll probably be there early. I tried using one of the online things this weekend. It wasn't working. And so that was the problem. We've only got 5 minutes left, so I'll just quickly mention that we do have another bill that we're advancing that would put full product liability back on vaccine manufacturers. I guarantee you that would cancel the mandates that would cancel everything. These things would be off the market immediately. All right, let's go back to the awakening here. What is the systematic deception? If you could sum it up, what are we talking about here?
Well, if I were to say it, as I've, you know, watched the film and looked at it again and again, it's that these individuals, all from the Black community, tell their story about their experience with the Democrat Party and how the Democrat Party deceived them, lied to them, made promises, always expect the vote from the Black community, but don't deliver. They have not helped in any way. And you can go back in time. You know, the Ku Klux Klan was from the Democrat Party.
Oh, the Party of Slavery. The Confederacy.
The movement was
the Confederacy was
Democrat. Democrat.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And but to hear them talk, and of course, we don't, let's not forget the 1619 Project that's being thrust down the throats of our students. You know, that we started, our country was started on the backs of slaves, and George Washington, when was George Washington born? I think it was after 1619, but it's all a big lie.
Yeah, probably mid-1700s.
The writers of that document, you know, they're getting awards for it. It's just insanity.
Well, here's what I don't understand. We've got about 3 minutes left, and I'll start with B and see whoever else wants to answer this question. It never made sense to me that the party of slavery, the party of segregation, the party of Jim Crow, the party of the KKK, the party of substandard public housing, substandard public education, corrupt city officers of every description, you know, is a party that Black Americans would support, considering everything that has been done since this country started. None of this makes sense to me. How, you know, you look at the original Republican legislators. Colonel Calvin was talking about this earlier. I don't know if Booker T. Washington or Frederick Douglass served in Congress, but the original Black legislators were Republicans. What happened?
Right. Yes, they were.
How did the Democrats take over Black America?
Let's go to the really nitty-gritty about this. What the main thing that the Democratic Party says when they first start to run it? Your check against the Republican Party, your check is going to be cut off. They're going to raise up your taxes. They're going to take your home, and you ain't going to be able to afford it. Okay? Really, the little penny is what's keeping some Black people into the area where they are. Think about it. In these cities, in 67 cities, they have brainwashed the people in some of these counties. Their counties are run down. And the money, where is all the money going? But they're able to hold on to that little bit of check and think that's all the way that they can get it. The education system was messed up also. See, and this is why I'm saying they don't study history. Some of them, I really feel bad for them. And President Trump said the right thing. They are being torn down by their own, burnt down by their own. And first thing that they use is policemen, your check, and how you're living. And they promise you all these things, okay? All these things. And when they get in office, what did Obama do? He didn't stay in Chicago, now did he? All right? So that should answer the question.
It does. We only have about 30 seconds left. Is that
Colonel? Greg, you need to have these people back.
Mama B, you know you're welcome back here every week, every Monday.
You're going to have them come back with notes and pencils.
I got 4 pages of notes already. Are you kidding? Let's give the Colonel the last word real quick here.
I love history, and there's a couple of quick things. I would like you to both all to look up Dr. Benjamin Quarles. Dr. Benjamin Quarles, Quarels, out of Morgan State College, where I went through Historical Black University. He was my college history professor. He wrote The Negro and the Making of America and Frederick Douglass, along with Lincoln and the Negro. And one of the things about Black history, we had 3 U.S. senators right after the Emancipation. We had 20 U.S.
I gotta hold you
representatives.
Up. I got to hold you. We're out of time. The show's actually over.
Okay.
Listen,
God bless.
Thank you.
Hey, we'll
thank you, Pianki.
GodBlessMotel2022.org.
There you go.
Okay,
oh, yeah. Listen, you're coming.
God
don't worry. You're going to come back. I'm going to have you
God
on.
Bless America.
Thank you, Pianki, Mama B, Rachel, Scotty, Colonel Calvin, Patty. Whew, what a morning. We're going to do it again next
week.
Don't worry.
I mean,
we'll be
Lumberton,
talking.
Alabama, thank you all so much.
Thanks, Mama B.
Love America.
Thank
Greg
you.
One more time, Greg Pangles for Action Radio at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. One of the best shows I think we've ever had here. I absolutely love everybody on the show. Welcome. You're all part of our big family now, and hopefully we're part of yours. And our legislative website, writeyourlaws.com, WRATEYOURLAWS, writeyourlaws.com. And we'll be back with all these folks really soon.